using free speech to free minds. You're listening to The David Knight Show.
As the clock strikes 13, it's Wednesday, the 28th of July, 2021, year of our Lord. And it is day 501 of America held hostage as they prepare us for more lockdowns and forced vaccines. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Well, today we're going to take a look at the rapidly evolving expert opinions. Oh, it's all based on data, that's right. Data that you're not allowed to question, that you're not even allowed to see. And we're going to talk about the coming mandates from the Biden administration. They've already mandated it through the Veterans Administration. We'll talk about the prevarications that they're using to do that and what is coming. Stay with us. Yesterday, the show trials, the Inquisition about January the 6th, was overshadowed, as everybody said, by the announcements that by the CDC that people who are multiply jabbed by the Trump shot are still going to have to wear masks indoors as they're moving to do this to children, moving to extend the vaccines to children. I'm going to talk about masks. I'm going to talk about what happened with the January 6th trials, but before I get to that, I want to talk first about the vaccines themselves. How is it that these vaccines are so ineffective that we have to still wear masks? Oh, it's the Delta variant, right? Yeah, we'll talk about that as well. But first, you know, we had years ago, Schoolhouse Rock had a little thing talking about how does a bill become a law, right? I'm a bill on Capitol Hill. And I have to go through all these different processes. Well, how does a vaccine get approved by the FDA? And fortunately, we have an expert here, because we have to deal with experts now. Those of us who are not anointed with special titles from special universities just have to stand down and bow to their expertise. Do not question it. So here is an expert. This is the University of Chicago. This is a science writer, expert, of course, explaining how a vaccine works.
The process of getting a vaccine approved for use in the general public is no picnic and can take several years.
They have to get their shot.
In the United States, vaccines are regulated by the Food and Drug Administration's Center for Biologics Evaluation and Research.
They have to get their shot.
The FDA works to ensure that all new vaccines on the market are safe, effective, and have minimal side effects, by carefully monitoring each stage of testing.
This is really going around now. They have to get their shot.
If the application is approved, vaccine clinical trials usually happen in three phases. Phase one is usually a small trial, 20 to 80 subjects, that's mostly focused on testing the safety of a vaccine and seeing how strong of an immune response it provokes in humans.
Have to get their shot.
During a phase two trial, the vaccine is tested on a larger group of participants, usually several hundred, and different doses of the vaccine are tested to find out which is the most effective.
Get their shot.
Finally, phase three trials test the vaccine on thousands of people and include testing the vaccine against a placebo, setting the long-term efficacy of the vaccine, and watching for very rare side effects.
Have to get their shot.
The FDA monitors the progress of these trials and will halt trials or request additional information or research if there are any concerns about the vaccine's safety or effectiveness.
Today, I want to update you on the next stage of this momentous medical initiative. It's called Operation Warp Speed. That means big and it means fast. A massive scientific, industrial, and logistical endeavor, unlike anything our country has seen since the Manhattan Project. You really could say that nobody's seen anything like we're doing, whether it's ventilators or testing. Nobody's seen anything like we're doing now within our country since the Second World War.
Yeah, there's reason for that, because we passed the Nuremberg Code after the Second World War. That's why we didn't see this type of stuff. Yeah, you've got a very detailed process here that rolls out over a long period of time. We have long-term testing. Guess what? If you've got a long-term test to see what the efficacy is going to be and what the safety is going to be, then it doesn't mean that you can shorten the term by adding more people. You just got a lot more guinea pigs that are still in a short-term test, not a long-term test. But it doesn't matter because, what was it? Oh, they got to get the shots. See, we have processes, we have rules, we have laws, we have a constitution, a bill of rights, but all that is just swept aside by presidents like Trump and Biden. They don't care what the process is. They don't care why there was a process. They don't care why we have individual liberty. They don't care why we did tests on drugs. And they don't care that these drugs have absolutely no liability because they have no liability for what they're doing to people. They're held harmless by the people who are their political hacks. So at the urging of the FDA, Pfizer and Moderna, who have not done their long-term tests, they've not done their due diligence, they haven't obeyed their own rules, let alone the Constitution, right? These shill agencies doing the bidding of Biden and Trump are now saying Pfizer and Moderna are going to include thousands more children in clinical trials. Yeah, and we'll do it for just a couple of weeks. And even if we have problems, we don't care. We're going to pretend they don't exist, and we're going to continue on at warp speed because that's what we've done throughout this massive guinea pig operation. We don't care when you have reports of death. We don't care that there's reports of 500,000 serious adverse effects and 12,000 deaths. We don't care. We just keep going. The FDA asked companies to include 3,000 children in the 5 to 11-year-old group because, you know, they got to get the shots, just as President Trump was saying about the vaccine mandates for kids. That's the context of what he was being asked about, the MMR vaccine mandates being done in New York and California, Massachusetts, for kids to go to school, even to private schools. They got to get the shots. No. Heart inflammation in teens raises red flags, but full warp speed ahead. We don't care. The FDA is likely to approve Pfizer booster shots as well, says Children's Health Defense Fund. We know they will. Even if they don't work, it doesn't matter. Even if they're not effective, even if they're not safe, they will approve booster shots. No testing, nothing required. As a matter of fact, they pointed out that Pfizer recently announced vaccinated people are going to need the booster shot, so let's just do it immediately, even though we've had two shots. That's unprecedented. We've never had a so-called vaccine where you had to have two shots 30 days apart. Does that not raise a red flag with you for something? And then within months, they're saying, well, you got to have a third shot now. Why doesn't anybody question this? Well, it's because they have a complete control of mainstream media. We have, as Children's Health Defense Fund points out, reliance on the simple so-called safe and effective standard, which sounds reasonable, is a relic of a time when there were far fewer and simpler medicines available to treat diseases. It was from a time when the pharmaceutical companies hadn't bought out ABC, CBS, NBC, CNN, Fox News, the entire lot of them are now owned by the pharmaceutical companies. And I say owned because they're paying millions, tens of millions of dollars, probably more than that, for all these different on each network. For all these different commercials. How do they pay people like Sean Hannity, who pushes the vaccine? How do they pay him tens of millions of dollars every year? Well, because they're making a lot more than that off of their biggest sponsors, the pharmaceutical companies. They financially, they did a leveraged buyout of them, if you will, back in the 1990s when they started doing the Ask Your Doctor commercials. And it's only gotten worse since then. So they're not going to get any opposition from the press. They're not going to get any opposition from the government because, of course, the government is a revolving door. people like the former HHS head, Alex Azar, for Trump, actually came from big pharmaceutical companies. And then you have Scott Gottlieb, who's now sitting on the board of directors of Pfizer after leaving the FDA under Trump. So this is exactly what is that? They own the government. They own the media. They said that Pfizer is already projecting to have $26 billion in COVID revenue this year. Now, we've talked about how we should get in public and how we should live our lives. But I think it's time that we should also be a little bit vocal in protests. If you're going to show up and do some protests, here's what I suggest you say.
Show me the money!
Jerry, you better yell!
Show me the money! Show me the money!
That's right. That should be our cry. Show me the money. Who bought you? Who bought you, Fox? Who bought you, CNN? Who bought you, Trump, Biden, the rest of you? Who owns you? Show me the money. Show me where you're making your money, Fauci. All the contortions he's done to get remdesivir approved, to get these vaccines approved, to shut down any other alternative treatments like HCQ and ivermectin, and Trump doing nothing. And, of course, we could also ask some of the mainstream, not the mainstream media, the alternative media, show me your money. Who's paying you to push 4D chess, to cover up for Trump? Who's paying you, right? The Department of Justice, in a decision that goes back to the beginning of the month, so they sat on it for 3 weeks, they have now declared that COVID-19 vaccine mandates are legal. And they can do that by fiat, in the same way that the CDC says, we're now going to change our policy on masks, or whatever, or the FDA can come in at any point in time, and they can, just as Fauci said, oh, we know that's safe and effective. They just got to dot the I and cross the T. And so by fiat, FDA, who's already violating all their rules with the emergency use authorization, as I pointed out many times, their own numbers that they showed us show that there is no emergency for anybody who is 55 or under, who doesn't have multiple health issues. There is no emergency for those people. So why are they pushing to put every kind of pressure on them to vaccinate them? And there certainly is no emergency for children. So if you're going to authorize this for emergency use, I mean, let's just think about that. You know, we think about chemotherapy. You get cancer, right? And so the FDA typically, if you've got an experimental drug, even if you're stage 4 terminal case, they usually won't make an emergency exemption for you. No, no, no. We might let you in our test trial here, and if you're lucky, and if you're even more lucky, it'll work instead of killing you. But, you know, you don't have much time left anyway. So, but we're not going to leave it up to you. We're going to determine how many people can be in these studies. And so they do an emergency use authorization. But let's say, for example, that you've got these pharmaceutical drugs, these chemicals that kill your immune system, make you deathly ill. They have very severe side effects, many of these cancer drugs. But let's assume that you don't have cancer. And maybe they just make everybody take that, right? I mean, that's where we are right now. We have an FDA that, on the one hand, people who are legitimately sick and about to die cannot make a determination that they can voluntarily take an emergency use authorization. And yet we have people who have absolutely no risk, according to their data, 55 and under, no risk, and unless you've got a lot of other health issues. But we're going to force those people to take it. That's like forcing somebody to take chemotherapy. Or forcing somebody to take radiation or surgery or whatever else. It makes absolutely no sense that we would do this to people. It's vicious. And so what are the real ingredients of a vaccine? Well, first of all, there's crony capitalism and greed. Then to that, you add coercion and intimidation, fines, and eventually brute force is where we're headed with this. And I'll show you where this is headed. We have, again, the Department of Justice has just arbitrarily declared this. And I said this as soon as Biden put in a lawyer, Javier Becerra, who was not an honest lawyer. This is the guy who took Kamala Harris, took over her persecution of whistleblowers exposing murder for hire in the abortion industry. Of course, the people who are hiring them to do the murder were Fauci and his ilk, the people at the NIH, the people at the FDA. Get me a baby of a certain age, and I want the organs, these particular organs, I want them fresh, not frozen. And here's the tens of thousands of dollars I'm going to pay you. So it was coming from the FDA, coming from the NIH. And so instead of doing something about that, Kamala Harris and then her successor, Javier Becerra, who is now the head of HHS, went after the whistleblowers, not after the killers. And so when he brought him in and put him as head of HHS, remember, HHS was headed by a former Big Pharma CEO, Alex Azar, who was CEO of Eli Lilly. And when Biden puts in a lawyer, I said, this is the next step. See, Trump was there to create the vaccine, and we don't care, like we would have if it had been Hillary, right? If it had been Hillary or Obama doing that, we would have had something to say. But with Trump, you trust the plan. With Trump, it's 4D chess and all the rest of this. And then after they get the vaccines, then they bring in Biden and the lawyers to force you to take the vaccine. And that's what's going on at the DOJ. It's what will be going on at HHS to mandate these experimental drugs. And forget about Nuremberg, right? As Trump said, we haven't seen anything like this since World War II. And we'd hope that the Nuremberg Code would stop anything like this, but it's not stopping it. The Department of Justice concluded an opinion, and that was, again, July the 7th. They just made it public yesterday. The federal law does not prohibit public agencies and private businesses from requiring COVID-19 drug vaccines under the FDA's emergency use authorization. So not even going to bother to wait for the FDA to rubber stamp this. They're moving on using the Department of Justice. On July 26th, the VA, Department of Veterans Affairs, they've been leading this, and I've had so many people send me the letters that they've gotten from the VA. This is the point of it. The VA is modeling this to make sure that it won't just be the VA. They're putting this out there as a model for all hospitals. We have a lot more government-run hospitals than we do private hospitals. So they're putting it out there as a model for all of them, and they're doing the vaccine pressure and mandates as conditions for jobs that'll be coming out tomorrow, most likely. That's what everybody's reporting. The government will do that. The federal government will do that as a model. You know, they're not going to go through and have a due process challenge. Remember, it was the New England Journal of Medicine that said last March, we don't want a due process challenge, so don't do this by legal mandate. Do this by coercing people through their employers. And so that's what the Biden administration is doing. They're taking the lead. They're showing how hospitals can coerce people as a condition of medical care by doing it at the VA. And then they're showing private businesses how they can coerce people by doing it to their own employees within the federal government. That's coming tomorrow. So the VA became the first federal agency to mandate the vaccine for its employees or be tested weekly. So that's the other part of it. You'll be tested weekly, then you'll be tested daily, then they will charge you for each of the tests and do it on a daily basis. See how they escalate this gradually. This is not getting worse except on the government side. Certain schools will require vaccination for students to attend class in person. And so they're rolling it out in the schools as well. We've seen that with the colleges that are out there. De Blasio, as I pointed out over the weekend, there was a California mayor. He was prodded by the media. Are you going to do that? When are you going to? Oh, I think that mayor is just, he's really leading in the country. It's great. And within a day, De Blasio is saying he's going to do that. Public sector entities, he said, need to move as quickly as possible. This DOJ decision is important, and I think it will be helpful because we have to put pressure on this situation. More coercion, more legal tricks and prevarications. Psaki, in a press release, press conference, said, no, we've not mandated it. Not yet. No, we'll wait another day or so. To a question whether or not the White House has made COVID-19 shots mandatory, she appeared to say the White House had offered the vaccines to every employee. The Biden administration, however, is considering to do it for all federal workers. President Biden on Tuesday said his administration is considering making it mandatory for federal workers to get the coronavirus vaccine, the Trump shots. He said that is under consideration right now, but if you're not vaccinated, you're not nearly as smart as I thought you were. If you're not vaccinated, you're much smarter than he thought you were. They thought they could gaslight you. And they haven't, even though they have complete control of the media, they have not been able to deceive at least a third of the people. And a lot of the people who did take the shot are doing it simply out of coercion. They know better. But the bad thing is that two-thirds of the people have taken it. And he said this as he was coming out of the office of the Director of National Intelligence. Unfortunately, they did not give any intelligence to Biden. He's just as stupid as when he went in. Biden is considering a vaccine mandate for all federal employers because of the Delta surge. Not for employers, but employees. But I guess you could say it's for the employers because it's for the agencies. But it's all because of the Delta surge. They don't have any other choice, right? It is propelled, says the Daily Mail, big cheerleaders of this, it is propelled by the highly transmissible Delta variant. So what if it's transmissible? Is it dangerous? What are the deaths that you've seen? The deaths have actually fallen. What is the Delta virus variant? Do you know that it is a Delta variant? I'll say this again. I've said it for the last several days. Do they have a test for it? Do they have a test? If they have a test, are they running the test on all these patients? Of course they're not. You know the answer to that. Even if they have a test, they're not running it on these patients to determine whether they have the Delta variant or not. This is nothing other than a narrative, a lie to sell this. If there is something that has changed, it is probably because we're seeing more of it in the areas where there is a high vaccination rate. The variant is probably the vaccine itself. And I say that because you remember a few months ago, they were saying, well, you know, we're injecting genetic codes to make your body into the vaccine manufacturing facility. That's how we can do it so fast. That's how we can get ahead of everybody else. Remember the original discussion at Warp Speed? Trump going around the table. How long will it take you? How long will it take you? How long will it take you? And the Moderna guy says, we can do it tomorrow because we'll have your body manufacturing the vaccine. And then the people come out and they say, well, you know, the problem is the protein spike is the most dangerous thing. Oh, well, this is not exactly the same as the protein spike. Well, it's got to be pretty similar, doesn't it? Or your body's not going to recognize it. You won't get any immunity. So, no, it's a variant of it. Oh, it's a variant of the original Wuhan virus, right? It's the most dangerous aspect. It's a variant of the most dangerous aspect. But there's nothing to see here. It's just a coincidence that where the people are getting vaccinated the most, that's where you're having the surge of Delta variants. And again, they don't know if it's a Delta variant. They just know that their vaccinated people are getting sick, so they invented the Delta, right? We can't just say that it's totally ineffective. There's got to be something else here. Oh, I know. Yeah, it's a variant, isn't it? So Biden spoke right after the CDC recommended fully vaccinated people go back to wearing masks again. Oh, because of the Delta variant. Not because the vaccine doesn't work. Not because the vaccine itself is a dangerous variant. Biden will announce a vaccination requirement across the federal government tomorrow, trumpets CNN. They're real excited about this. And again, he's going to be modeling employer mandates. And I think we're going to get this directly mandated by the government in just a short period of time, and I'll show you why. You've got now all of the influencers that they can find, whether it's Joy Behar on The View or whether it's the GOP in Tennessee, they're all pushing now to get people vaccinated. You know, we wouldn't have this problem. It's the Delta variant, and the only reason we're having this problem is because you unvaccinated people when they admit that their vaccine doesn't do anything to the Delta variant and their narrative. And again, I don't believe any of that. I don't believe that there's a Delta variant. I believe that there's a vaccine that is making people sick. But they explain it away, and they can't keep their lies straight or their logic straight. So if the vaccine doesn't work on the Delta variant, it's the fault of the people who haven't taken the vaccine that the Delta variant is spreading around and getting the vaccinated people. That's what they're telling us. See how absurd that narrative is? all the vaccinated people, the vaccines would work if it wasn't for this Delta variant. But if you unvaccinated people who are getting all the vaccinated people sick with the Delta variant, well, it doesn't work against the Delta variant, so why are you blaming the unvaccinated people? Well, we know why. So employers, schools, and I'm telling you, after they reach critical mass, what they're going to do is they're going to use brute force to push this on us. Biden will not impose the requirements on the U.S. military, says CNN. And I guess they would know because they work hand in glove with the Biden administration. They say he will not impose it on the U.S. military despite his authority to do so from the time being. He is, however, likely to outline how the Department of Defense may seek to approach the issue going forward. Again, as they label this, we have a pandemic because of the unvaccinated. They can't make up their mind. Is it because of the unvaccinated or is it because of the Delta variant? So you listen to this. In one sentence, the spokesperson for the CDC. It was Biden reading off of his script. We have a pandemic because the unvaccinated. He didn't say of, because of the, this is, if you were doing your job at CNN, you would put in parentheses, S-I-C, at the end of every sentence that Biden says, because it's so garbled. Yeah, that's Latin for thus he said it, right? So that's exactly the way he said it. We didn't make the mistake. It was Biden who made the mistake. But they don't want to point that out. So Biden says, we have a pandemic because the unvaccinated. And they're sowing enormous confusion. And the more we learn about this virus and the Delta variation, the more we have to be worried and concerned. There's only one thing we know for sure. If those other 100 million people got vaccinated, we'd be in a very different world. That's right. You really would have a very different world. That's why we're not going to do it. But again, is it the unvaccinated or is it the Delta variant? And your vaccine does not protect people from the Delta variant. So this is an opinion that came out from the Office of Legal Counsel at the Department of Justice, dated July 6th, but was not released until Monday. And then they immediately started mandating it for VA employees. Now, we've got the unvaccinated killing us all, right? Or it's the Delta variant. We don't know which. But, the vaccine doesn't protect the vaccinated from the unvaccinated people. It doesn't protect the vaccinated people from the Delta variant. But it's our fault. It's not the CDC or Pfizer's fault. It's not the government's fault. But here is something that is the government's fault. At the same time, they're hyping up this panic, and we're all going to die, and it's the unvaccinated. It's only the unvaccinated Americans that they're concerned about. The foreign citizens who are coming over here illegally, they don't care. Over 40,000 mostly unvaccinated migrants were released by Biden, and they skip out on their ICE appointments. Only 13% are coming back to appear in court. So 87%, you never see them again. The New York Post's Betsy McKay noted earlier this month that over 80% of the migrants are unvaccinated. So, and just one statistic, when they capture over 50,000 immigrants, they call them illegal aliens, given catch and release, they said that 43,500 of them are roaming around freely and aren't coming back. And you've got 80% of the migrants, over 30,000 in this case, are unvaccinated. Yeah, a very different world, isn't it? There's a meme out, and we'll be talking about memes and comedies coming up. There's an amazing story from the European Union about comedy and memes and how it has to be shut down because comedy is the greatest threat to them. And of course we know that they're humorless dictators, but I'm going to show you that that document. It is unbelievable. But here's one of the things that they can't handle. In this particular meme, you've got a picture of Biden saying the unvaccinated are killing people, and right underneath it says meanwhile at the border, and you see the unvaccinated climbing over the wall. We know that 80% of them are not vaccinated. The higher COVID rate is found in some counties with higher vaccination rate. How can that be? And this is a story. There's the meme right there. How can that be? Well, you've got CBS trying to explain this to people. And again, everything that they say that contradict themselves within the same article. They said this comes as the highly contagious Delta variant is coming, so be very afraid. Be very afraid. They said above average vaccination rates, the counties that have that also have higher COVID case rates, while the case rates are falling in counties with below average vaccination rates. Huh, how do they explain that? Well, they said that this is happening because of the Delta variant. But how is it that the unvaccinated people can handle the Delta variant, so-called Delta variant, if the vaccinated can't? And they tell you, they keep telling you how dangerous the Delta variant is. They said they point to preliminary data from China that the Delta variant may be 1,000 times more viral load in the nose than the previous variants. Now, how do they know that? Because they immediately say, the person putting out this information says, if that's the case, do they not know for sure? Did they not do any tests themselves? No, they're just taking the word of China on this. This is a rumor from China. How did we get into this situation 501 days ago? Because lies from China. You had a social media bot campaign, over 100,000 accounts that were focused on Italy to get them to follow the example that China had done. And yet, we're supposed to now take their word for what is happening with the Delta variant? We don't know if that's the case, even a little bit. And somebody's vaccinated, that could be a lot. See, this is the science from the experts. And then they say, this guy whose name is Norris, he is an infectious disease expert. See, he's an expert, so just do whatever he says. They don't give us credentials. All he needs is to be identified as an expert. So Mr. Expert Norris says that as case rates increase with the Delta variant, more vaccinated and unvaccinated people will get COVID, though data indicates that the rates will likely remain much higher among the unvaccinated. Well, that kind of contradicts the whole thing that they're finding right now, right? The whole point of the article was that, in reality, they're kind of scratching their heads and wondering, why is it that the counties with the high vaccination rates have so much of the Delta variant? Why are the people there so sick in these highly vaccinated areas compared to the other places? And so they pull in an infectious expert, and he says, well, we got rumors from China that this Delta variant thing, this is big, this is really bad. And when this happens, you're going to have a lot more people who are both vaccinated and unvaccinated, and they're going to be getting this. And so it'll be the unvaccinated. They'll be much higher among the rates will be much higher among the unvaccinated. It's like, but that's not happening, is it? No, it's not. Cuomo says we must knock on the doors and put people in cars. We've got to drive them and get that vaccine into their arm. See, it's coming. The brute force section is coming. We've gone through the greed and crony capitalism stage under President Trump. We've gone through the propaganda stage under both Trump and Biden, the lies. And we're now going through the modeling stage where they model this behavior for people. They're going from bribing people to shaming and blaming people. And so you're going to have them come around to your door eventually to get that vaccine in your arm, says Cuomo. He says, I wear masks because I care about you. I get a vaccine because I care about you. He could go on and say, I wear a helmet because I care about you. I wear a seatbelt because I care about you. Well, if your helmet works, it protects you. It doesn't protect me. Same with your seatbelt. Same with your mask. Same with your vaccine. And I fight this because I care about you. I fight this because even if I believed that this were safe and effective, and I don't for a moment, if they believed it, they would not be giving legal immunity to the vaccine companies. That's right. Absolutely.
Show me the money!
That's right. Show me the money. Yeah, if they believed it, yeah, show me the money. Show me that you believe your product, okay? Put your money behind this. Put those tens of billions of dollars that Trump gave to each and every one of you. Put that on the line. Put your money where your mouth is, or shut up, pharmaceutical companies. Put your money where your mouth is and do some honest reporting, Fox, CNN, or just shut up. Because we know where the money is, even if we can't see it. We know who's getting it. We know who's being paid to do this. With $250 million in the Ad Council, they've never had an ad campaign that big. Yeah, show me the money. He says, we understand that we're all in this together. No, actually, see, that's the kind of collectivist Bolshevik that these people feed you, this collectivism. All of this, as I've said before, there is no such thing as public health. There is only individual health. And the public health is sacrificing the individual to the community, to the village, as Hillary Clinton would say, whether we're talking about education or whether we're talking about vaccination, sacrificing the individual. They don't care what your individual health profile is. They don't care what your choice is. They don't care what the law says or the Constitution. As Breitbart pointed out, 81% of Americans who have not received the vaccine yet say they probably or definitely will not get the vaccine. Of those, 45% say they definitely will not. So there we are. If the number is truly 100 million people, and I don't think it is, I think it's actually larger than that, because they say 163 million Americans are considered fully vaccinated. Maybe they're saying with one shot that takes the number up to two-thirds. But let's just say that it's 100 million, as Biden said. Well, then if 45% say they're definitely not going to take it, that means that there are 45 million people like you and I who absolutely are never going to take this under any circumstances. Never, ever. 45 million, that's something for them to deal with. And I'm telling you that they will work on the other two-thirds or three-quarters of the population until they get them vaccinated. And then the people who survive it and the people who don't have family members or friends who are permanently disabled and paralyzed from this or have unending tremors, those people who dismiss that as just a freak accident because they're told from the by the media it's just a freak accident. I know it happened because of vaccine, but that's so rare. Your number just came up. Sorry about that. Those people will then start to come after us, and I'll show you how this is being, how we're being targeted here as well. A tipping point, says Governor Newsom, as government officials and health groups move to require the corona vaccine for workers. New York gave workers a choice, get vaccinated or face weekly testing. And again, that's going to go daily, and then it's going to be where you have to pay for it. We've already seen this done, revealed. You could predict this as easily predictable, but we've already seen it put out there by Macron. I'm sorry, it wasn't Newsom. It was his California Health Secretary, Mark Galli, who said you can call it a tipping point. For so many Californians and Americans, this might be the time to get vaccinated. No. And so medical groups, says MSN, are drawing the line. It's the experts. It's the public health experts. It's government officials, and it's medical groups. For example, these are the two that they give here. This is a statement by the American Pharmacists Association and the American Public Health Association. Well, now, the American Public Health Association are the bureaucrats running these health departments everywhere that have now been turned into little demigods as arbitrary medical dictators everywhere. So they kind of like this thing. And then you've got the American Pharmacists Association pushing, let's see, what do they do? Oh, that's right, they sell pharmaceutical drugs. And so those two medical groups have drawn the line for you. The politicians who are feeding off of this power and the pharmacists who are feeding off of the money tell you the health and safety of U.S. workers, families, communities, and the nation depends upon it. You've not done your tests. You've not even pretended to test this stuff. Newsom does say that California will have the strongest vaccine verification in the system, in the U.S. And, when we look at this, when we look at the people running against him, you got Larry Elder who's running. What is Larry Elder's position on this? Well, Larry Elder was cheering the Warp Speed vaccine because it was Trump, right? And again, I pick on Larry Elder because he seems to be, you know, the best hope that people have of getting rid of Newsom. He's articulate. He can do very well in a debate. He checks the intersectionality boxes because he's black. He's got a lot of things in his favor. The problem is he's got a Republican orientation and some conservative views. But when it comes to the vaccine, Larry Elder cheered the Warp Speed vaccine. And then he made this statement about the vaccines, because people kept asking him this. He made this statement yesterday. He said, "I got a vaccine. If you want it, then take it. But as governor, I won't force you to take it." The people who cheer the vaccine, let me tell you, when I see the Republicans cheering the Trump vaccine, you know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of these Democrats who come out and say, "I love the Constitution. I love the Second Amendment. I would never do anything to get rid of the Second Amendment, but turn in your guns." These pro-Second Amendment Democrat gun control people are like the pro-choice but take your vaccine Republicans, cut from the same cloth, the same kind of deception. And I'm sorry, but that's really where the dividing line is for me at this point in time. What is your position on vaccines? End of story right now. Because that's what is ushering in all of this insanity, all of this control, all of this tyranny, all of this global agenda. The vaccine is the tip of the spear, if you will, that little hypodermic needle. We're at a point in this epidemic, this pandemic, says Newsom, where individuals' choice not to get vaccinated is now impacting the rest of us in a profound, devastating, and deadly way. See, it's not, they can't make up their mind. Even within the same sentence, it's either the Delta variant that is killing all the vaccinated people, or it's the unvaccinated people that are killing all of the vaccinated people. See, we don't have to worry about the Delta variant if we're not vaccinated. Because, again, I think that's what it is. Montclair City employees who go maskless will have to wear stickers declaring their vaccination. This is a California town. You see how they spin the narrative? We've been saying for the longest time, and boy, they come after you, don't they? You know, Marjorie Taylor Greene said, you know, this is, look, what are you going to have us wear little tags? Maybe you'll make them yellow stars like the Nazis did to the Jews. Oh, says the ADL, we got to purge her, right? They came after her hard. So she went to the Holocaust Museum in Washington. She came out and groveled profusely before them, but now they're still after her. And so instead of having, look at the way California is doing it here, this little town, Montclair. For the city employees, okay, if you have gotten the vaccine, then you either wear the mask or you wear a sticker that says I've gotten vaccinated. So they spin it a little bit. Instead of putting a yellow star on the unvaccinated people, they put a gold star. Yes, I was a good little obedient employee and I got vaccinated. They put a gold star on you. See, it's all different, right? Except the people who don't have the gold star, the absence of a gold star is no different than the presence of a yellow star. But it's all different. It's totally a different thing. It's not at all the same thing. Absolutely not the same thing. Joy Behar, here's a good example. Okay, and you look at these people on The View, and these other people, I'm looking at the article here. Sarah Haynes, I have no idea who that is. Sonny Hostin, I have no idea who that is. I never had any idea who Joy Behar was either. These people are not has-beens. They're never has-beens. Right? They've never had any fame or fortune. They are cherry-picked by Disney simply because they're ignorant, hateful, and biased. And they put them out there to push these agendas. Why should I care what Joy Behar has to say? Well, because she's a spokesperson for the agenda that's coming. That's why Disney put her in place. So you should pay attention because they have chosen people like Joy Behar, who have absolutely no intelligence, no talent, no history of even being famous, and they put her in this place to give you, not her view, but the view of your corporate masters. And so here's the view of your corporate masters coming out of the mouth of Joyless Behar. She said, I saw this morning that the CDC is now saying that even vaccinated people should be wearing masks indoors, which I've been doing when I go to supermarkets, etc. See, here's the thing about the mandates. We've given them lottery tickets. We have given people incentives all over the place. Football tickets, Krispy Kremes. Oh, you had me at the Krispy Kreme. I tell you, that's it. Yeah. In West Virginia, they offered to give them a gun. Apparently, that's the only shot that they're scared of. The vaccine shot, not getting actually shot. So bribery didn't work, says Joyless. So the next step might be what we look at as threats. You will not be able to go to a restaurant unless you're vaccinated. You will not be able to go to a museum. You will not be able to go into the theater. In France, President Macron, she cheers this, has already made this a mandate. As of the past 24 hours, 1.3 million people have signed up. Even more took to the streets in violent protests, Joyless. And even more people, you know, they had even a bigger explosion in black market vaccine papers. He didn't put it into effect yet. He just said he's going to do it. And 1.3 million people signed up, and several times more got their black market papers. Just the idea that you're going to lose your so-called freedom is scary, she said. By the way, one more thing, said Joyless. Why is their freedom more important than my freedom not to get sick? Well, because you don't have a right to health. You don't even have a right to health care, Joy. You don't have a right to anything except to be left alone. That's what America is about. If you want something else, if you want to demand a right to be fed and clothed and housed and a right to an education and all these other things, those are positive rights. Obama knew exactly what he was talking about. He says, you know, we have in this Constitution here in America, these are negative rights. Well, they're not negative, except if you look at it from the perspective of a wannabe dictator. They're prohibitions on what people like Obama and Behar and Trump and Biden can do. That's what the Bill of Rights is. You will not do this, you will not do that, you will not do that. But it doesn't hand out anything to anybody. It just is there to restrict government tyrants. And so the government tyrants say, that's negative. And Obama says, I like this positive approach to rights, which says you have a right to health care, you have a right to food, you have a right to this, to that, and it'll all be provided by the government because they'll take everything from you and then hand it out to you like a child on allowance. And as I think it was Ford who said, any government that can give you everything can take everything from you first. And so she says, why is their freedom more important than my freedom not to get sick? I don't understand that idea that I'm taking away their freedom. She just said, threaten them. Tell them they can't go to a restaurant, they can't go to a theater, they can't go to a museum, they can't do anything. How am I taking away their freedom, she says. You see how they can't keep their lies straight, even in the same paragraph? Again, the Delta variant's killing all of our vaccinated people. They can't handle it. The vaccine can't handle it. But it's the unvaccinated's fault. She says, I don't understand that idea that I'm taking away their freedom. They're basically taking my freedom away by not getting vaccinated. Can I get an amen on that? And then the amen chorus of Sarah Haynes and Sonny Hostin, both of them say, amen, amen. Again, these are people, I have no idea who these people are, and I really don't care. It only matters because these know nothing, no name, no career, no talent, no information people have been chosen by spokespersons by Disney that owns about a third of all the media outlets everywhere and all the entertainment franchises. They gave them a platform, and they will take them off of that platform if they're not pushing what Disney wants. And so that's Disney talking. That's not some idiot non-actress talking. In Manitoba, only fully vaccinated are allowed extra privileges. This is what the guy called it, extra privileges, like going to the movies. See, this is where we are. I don't have a right to go anywhere or do anything. Everything that I do now, because of the lockdown that was started by Trump 501 days ago, by flushing money out to these criminals and big pharmaceutical companies and in the hospitals who killed people out of financially incentivized malpractice funded by Trump, directed by the CDC and Fauci. Those criminal murderers in the hospital systems, they and Trump turned everything in our life into a government-granted privilege. That's the fundamental issue with all these vaccine passports. You're changing my life to a government-granted privilege. I can go nowhere or do anything unless the government says so. And if I don't do everything that the government says, starting with a vaccine, but ending where? There is no end to it. It is the Chinese social credit system. The tracking and the testing is what the biometric surveillance that they rolled out and modeled and tested in China was all about. We created that, and then we rolled it out in China. We created the virulent vaccines and the bat coronavirus. We created the narrative, all of that, and we modeled it and rolled it out in China so these people could then bring it in to us. And it's a world where you have no rights. You only have government-granted privileges. And so this is why we fight. This is why we resist. And we will not be taken down by this. You have to resolve that you're not going to go along with this. The fight starts on the inside. That's what I said to the guy who was saying, shut up about your Christian faith. I said, well, you know, the problem is this. You have to know what you believe. You have to know what you have confidence in. And if you have faith in Christ, it really doesn't matter what these people are going to do. I said this from the very beginning. I said, take a look at the story of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. This is not, as some of these pastors out there, I claim authority over this virus, and I claim I'm not going to get sick. And they love to take those guys and make them poster child for the people who wouldn't get the who wouldn't wear the mask or do what they wanted them to do at the time. I said, no, that's not the model. I said, the model is that we have things that we're going to do in our life. We have the authority to do those things. You may have the power to throw us into the furnace. You may have the power to destroy our body. God can stop you from doing that. But even if God does not stop you from doing that, even if I were to get a weaponized virus that was deliberately released, whatever, I'm not going to go along with these this rebellion against law and authority that you represent. So I'll take the consequences. And that's what I said to that guy. I said, well, you know, you may not really understand the Christian principles of our country, but if you think that everything is just, you know, everybody's got a truth, there is no such thing as absolute truth. All that we have is this short period of time that we have in this life, that there's nothing afterward. You know, if that's your mindset, you're useless in this fight. Yeah, they're going to take you out pretty quickly. I said, a backbone is inside of you. It's not some kind of an exoskeleton. If you're a jellyfish, even if you've got an exoskeleton, that's not going to work. You have to grow a backbone. And to grow a backbone, you got to have some foundation for that backbone and what you believe. That's going to be inside of you. So we have to fight this idea that everything in life now is a privilege. Only people who have been fully vaccinated will be allowed to go to professional sporting events, movie theaters, casinos, galleries. He's already implementing in Canada what Joyless Behar wants to implement to everybody. Churches at 50% capacity or 150 people, whichever is lower. Masks will still be required. On and on. Canadian civil liberties lawyer James Kitchen told LifeSite News, and again, James Kitchen is with the Justice Center for Constitutional Freedom. They're the people that are representing these pastors that are being locked up. And James Kitchen said, one of the positive social realities of a society that is actually free and is therefore also equal is that everybody is able to participate generally in public life by attending cultural events and facilities. He added, the new rules are akin to the hallmarks of an authoritarian or dystopian society and the segregation of a class of people because of their status, be it immutable characteristics such as race or gender, or fundamental personal choices such as religious belief or health choices. He said, such a policy infringes on the rights to liberty and privacy under Sections 7 and 8 of the Canadian Charter, because it outs and penalizes people for deeply personal health choices. I think I will go with his definition of what's happening here rather than Behar. I think he understands this. I think she is just representing a hateful ignorance that is there. But I want to play for you Stephen Schellenberger, and I've played his the trailer. I thought the trailer that he did for the film The Spark was excellent, and we had a very good discussion about what it was like to be in Hollywood, how Hollywood and the people who are pushing you into certain areas are very focused on a particular satanic agenda. And he is in Canada, and he published this out on YouTube after having just come back from a church service there.
Okay, so here we are, and we're coming back from being at church. Yes, we go to church every Sunday in Elmer, and our pastor has had almost $200,000 or over $200,000 in fines. They locked his church up, so now we have it in this glorious, beautiful field with all of us sitting on lawn chairs, on towels, on benches. And it's the most inspiring, beautiful way to spend a Sunday afternoon you can ever imagine. And then they make us food, and we have this great food to share with people, share these conversations. So this is actually really, you know, they've tried to shut him down and fine him. And guess what? It only has made his congregation grow double in size, incrementally get bigger and bigger. Like, it's amazing. And you never leave that church without having a couple of tears in your eyes, because it's, like I said, it's just so inspiring. Jesus is love. Okay.
Has your news been censored, banned over and over again? Has vital information been held prisoner by mainstream and anti-social media? It's the duty of every thinking person to make the great escape to thedavidknightshow.com. There you'll find links to live streams, videos, audio podcasts, and support links. Live stream the show at DLive and Trovo every Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern. Videos at BitChute and YouTube. New audio podcast, The Real David Knight Show, at Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, iHeart, Spotify, and more. But even though there's a light at the end of the tunnel, without your support, the show will run out of gas. The links to support the show are at thedavidknightshow.com. To donate via Subscribestar, donate via or donate via Cash App, Bitcoin, or P.O. Box. Our sincere thanks to all of you who have stood with us to get this far. Please don't forget to share the links and pray for the country as well as our family.
APS Radio delivers multiple channels of music right to your mobile device. Get the APS Radio app today and listen wherever you go.
You'll find the links to all of those channels there. And we also don't put up just the full show on video format. We do put up shorter clips, anywhere from 2 minutes to 20 minutes. So yesterday, I think we had a just under two-minute clip, and we had one that was, I think, 18 minutes. So we put up excerpts of varying lengths there. Try to keep them short, but sometimes we want to keep it all together. The one that I put up that was 18 minutes yesterday was about the Second Amendment stuff, because there was actually three different components to it, and I thought that ought to all be tied together. But you can also find the links to the podcasts, and links not only to the podcast hosts, which are Podbean and Stitcher, but we also have, Spreaker, I think it is. I get the two of those confused. But we also have the links to iTunes, iHeart, many other places where you can grab the podcast feed. And it also shows how you can support the program, because the program is supported by voluntary contributions. And I just want to thank the people who have been so kind and generous this month. Thank you to each and every. I wish I could thank every one of you, but like I said, it's hard to get in contact with people who donate through Cash App, for example, the only thing I've been able to see that I can do is just put a heart there when I see the contribution. But we do see your name, and we do appreciate that. I know we have many people that have been very faithful to contribute on an ongoing basis there. We also have Subscribestar where you can sign up. And then we have people who contribute through Zelle, and it's also hard to get back to them. I had a guy who sent us an email, and or actually didn't send us an email. It was a message that was conveyed via Zelle. So he didn't have his email, so he said, let me know if you get this. So I announced it on air. I hope he heard that. Also want to say thanks to Jeff and Wendy, who have been big supporters of ours, actually our best friends back in North Carolina. So I want to thank them as well. And many of you are friends of the broadcast. We try to keep this not being behind a paywall because we want we understand that people have different situations right now, and there's a lot of people that are really struggling financially. That'll always be the case, but it's going to be particularly the case right now. So we want this information to get out. And again, if you like the broadcast, please do what you can to support us by sharing the broadcast. Because if we can get a broader base of support, even if people just gave us a cup of coffee equivalent for the month, you know, $5, that if we had a broad base of support and if we had all the people who listen and download on a regular basis doing that, that would cover the expenses. Just consider that, and especially please consider praying for us because that really does work. That's not the last resort. That is the most important thing that you could do for us. I want to finish up with the political moves to push these vaccines, talk a little bit about masks, and then I'm going to talk about these humorless dictators and how they want to control us. There's a document that came out of the European Commission. Radicalization Awareness Network is the organization, and you will not believe what they have to say about coming after comedy. And, of course, they even understood in this document what I have quoted many times from Saul Alinsky's Rules for Radicals, that ridicule is the most effective weapon. That's why all the late-night comedians have become politicians. They have focused, they've given up comedy to the extent that they just become people who ridicule the political opponents of their, the people who pay them. That's what Stephen Colbert has become. He's just become a political hack. And he's doing it through ridicule. But they understand that's a weapon. And they do reference that there. But then they can't get past their humorless dictator orientation. So it's actually kind of funny to watch this. Fauci, CNN, the White House, Newsom, Cuomo, all of them ratcheting up attacks on unvaccinated Americans. That's a headline from Watson. You notice who's missing there? Any Republicans. See, that kind of partisan blindness represented by InfoWars, by Watson, that kind of partisan blindness is what's getting us there. The fact that we'll excuse it when it's done by Trump, we'll excuse it when it's done by DeSantis. Or when you have Kay Ivey out there saying, "It's these unvaccinated people, they're making us sick." Or McConnell saying the same thing, essentially. Or Scalise. The cheerleaders, the Republican cheerleaders, they are ignored. We don't pay any attention to that. Why? Well, you know, the reasoning is, well, don't criticize the Republicans because, you know, the Democrats are even worse. No, they're both bad. So we need to find a different approach to this. And again, that approach is from you, the individual, out. Why do you think, in the bigger picture, as a Christian, you understand why this is happening to us, don't you? Look at this society. How could God not judge us for what we're doing here? So when we look at what is really happening on the Republican side as well, I've spent a lot of time myself talking about the Democrats because they are bloodthirsty tyrants. But then you have the compliant, quisling GOP, the Tennessee GOP. And, of course, we just had a good move from the Tennessee GOP last week. Last week they said, you're not going to push vaccinations against the wishes of the parents. Just stop it. As a matter of fact, this has gotten so bad, I don't want you even talking about any kind of vaccines, just to make sure you're not doing this. You're not going to talk about any vaccines on school campus because the state public health department and the little bureaucrat running it said, oh, by the way, we can do this. We don't have to. We don't care what the parents want. We can pretend that we have the mature minor doctrine. Well, they don't think minors are mature enough to drive a car or own a gun or smoke a cigarette or take a drink, but hey, you can determine that you want to participate in a drug trial of a new novel approach, and you don't have to tell your parents. Oh, you can also get an abortion. We can kind of skirt that around there as well. Or change your gender. See how they're putting this on those mature minors. Those mature minors, those minors when they're 6 or 7 years old, they can determine what gender they are. And those same mature minors can also have consensual sex with the pedophiles that are grooming them. That's where the mature minor thing actually takes you. So they did the right thing, and they said, all right, if that's going to be your attitude, that you can vaccinate kids without their parents' approach, get rid of all your vaccination information at the schools. All of it. All of it. And now they've gone wobbly because they have been ridiculed by all the late-night comedians and everything. So now they've got to come back. The Republicans have got to come back, walk this back, because they can't stand the ridicule. And they have to kowtow to the pharmaceutical lobby that is now controlling our government. More than half of the Republican state senators in the Tennessee legislature signed an open letter yesterday calling on residents to get vaccinated. They said, quote, although we've made progress, COVID-19 is not over. There's been a recent spike in the number of cases because of the more contagious Delta variant. Can you tell the difference between the Tennessee senators, more than half of them, and Cuomo or Biden or Newsom? There is no difference in what they're saying. They're saying exactly the same thing. That's why I said these people, these GOP vaccine pushers, are no different than the gun-grabbing Democrats who say they love the Second Amendment. So the vaccines have been found to be safe and effective against COVID-19, continued the Republican senators in Tennessee. If they had been available from the start and widely used, over 600,000 American families that are mourning the loss of a loved one, along with tens of thousands of people who are waiting lung transplants or trying to learn to walk again, would have avoided that headache. What about the people in the VAERS system? Have they not ever heard of that? How could they not have heard of that? This appeal for vaccinations comes weeks after the state's leading GOP COVID vaccine official, Michelle Fiscus, was fired, reportedly to appease GOP lawmakers. It doesn't come weeks after. It comes a week after. GOP lawmakers were upset over her push for vaccinations. And it wasn't her push for vaccinations. It was her push against parents for vaccinations. They should not apologize for that. They should not go soft. Again, they need a spine. They don't have anything on the inside that gives them direction or foundation. Vaccines have been saving lives for over a century. The lawmakers continued in their letter. Sound just like Mitch McConnell. As a result, polio, smallpox have been eradicated, right? Well, let me tell you, this is not a vaccine. This is not a vaccine. Smallpox vaccines, I pointed out, that Washington and these other guys were taking, first of all, they had some very deleterious effects because they didn't know exactly what they were doing. But they were not loaded up with the adjuvants, the chemicals that are designed to inflame your immune system and perhaps cause permanent immune system damage. So they weren't loaded up with adjuvants, irritants. They weren't loaded up with chemical preservatives and many other things. And to package it, you know, for mass production. And they were actually a weakened or dead form. They didn't turn your body into a vaccine manufacturing facility. They didn't have you manufacture a toxin. That's what's happening here. The strategy for all these vaccines is for you to manufacture a toxin, the protein spike, and to hope that your immune system can shut that down. And in many cases, we're seeing it doesn't. It is not a vaccine. It is a variant. And it is a deadly toxin that they are causing your body to manufacture. Politico has a story, anti-vax conservatives come for DeSantis, calling him a sellout. Why? Because he is pushing the vaccine. I said this from the very beginning. At the same time that he was doing things, and he actually did things to stop vaccine mandates, unlike Greg Abbott, who just postured about it. And I gave him credit for that, but I said at the same time, he's pushing this and pushing it even in grocery store chains like Publix for you to get the vaccine. So I said, understand where this guy is coming from. He's not your savior. He's not your friend, ultimately. He's doing some right things, and I can't say that about any of the Democrats. They're not doing anything right. So take what you can get, but understand that your solution is not at the federal level. They're your enemies. Your solution is not at the state level. Fauci understands that. That's why he's focusing on local public health officials to make dictates and local law enforcement to enforce those dictatorial mandates. Fauci understands that. We need to understand that. The New York Times is pushing for George W. Bush to be a U.S. vaccine envoy, reports RT. And with the subtitle, hasn't the world suffered enough from him yet? Yeah. You miss me yet? Mission accomplished. Remember that guy? Yeah. Yeah. We should use him, says the New York Times. New York Times loves George W. Bush now, right? Because it's a big club and they're all in it. Op-ed columnist James Harding for the New York Times admits, he says, well, we know that what George W. Bush is remembered for by the entire world is for Iraq, the war that Americans were promised would be a cakewalk, in which kids would rush to welcome U.S. troops with flowers, but it turned out to be IEDs, planted less by kids than by Iraqis who wanted us to stop stealing their country's oil and priceless artifacts. This is the RT commentary. I agree with all that. Harding wants us to remember, however, that Bush was also, quote, the first global health president. Hey, see, he's part of the global club, just like the New York Times. So all is forgiven. He's referring to the president's emergency plan for AIDS relief called PEPFAR, a flashy and difficult to evaluate but enormously expensive AIDS program, of course, right? And, of course, who is at the center of all that the federal government does with AIDS? Fauci, right? He's at the center of all this. So the New York Times goes on to say, no, we need somebody who can use the bully pulpit and backroom pressure to get world leaders, pharmaceutical leaders, and health agencies to urgently accelerate the funding, delivery, and distribution of vaccines. Basically, he's been watching Tony Blair go to work pushing a global vaccine passport in the UK. And he's starting to get jealous, right? So these two guys, Tony Blair and George W. Bush, who pushed us into war based on lies, lies based on torture by the CIA, the person who covered all that up and administered a lot of it, Gina Haspel, was elevated by Trump to head the CIA. So they're all in the same club. You need to understand that. You really do need to understand that. Bush, whose war has killed millions in the Middle East, as some kind of a global healer, does prove, however, Bush's ability to generate international goodwill using American taxpayer dollars even as he commits war crime on a grand scale against an invisible enemy. He also proved adept at squandering Americans' money on projects that generated bad publicity, like the 2008 TARP bailout. That bailed out the big banks and nobody else. Bush turned the U.S.'s last budget surplus into a big, fat, sucking hole from which the nation may never emerge. But, of course, that hole was dug deeper, much deeper, by Trump and by Biden. But Trump really took a shovel to it. And now you've got Biden doing the same thing. So you're not going to stop this without, let's say, a global pandemic that requires all the world's nations to ban cryptocurrency and shift to digital currencies issued by their central banks because, you know, cybersecurity. That last part is actually the thesis of an op-ed written by Robert Manning, a senior fellow of the Brent Scowcroft Center for Strategy and Security at the reliably pro-war Atlantic Council. See, all these think tanks, the NATO's think tank, the Atlantic Council, the neocon think tank, they're all pushing to create financial chaos, to flush out and do a financial reset. That is the great reset at the very bottom of it. And to push us into new digital currencies by the central banks where they can control where you spend your money, how long your money lasts, where they can confiscate your money for any reason, and even determine what you're going to spend your money on. not just where you're going to spend it. You might remember Brent Scowcroft as the advisor to the elder Bush and Manning as a Bush administration official from 2001 to 2008. Surely that was just a coincidence that The Atlantic published it on the same day that Bush as vaccine Superman piece, that's what they called it on the New York Times. That was just a coincidence, right? This article from LifeSite News, is it legal for businesses to ask patrons their vaccination status? Well, there's different approaches to this. The key thing, folks, is you can't rely on your HIPAA status. I mean, you can stand on your HIPAA rights, and they really do not have the authority to ask you. They don't have the authority to force you to do anything. And but then, of course, you don't have the ability to force them to serve you either, really. That's the bottom line. So ultimately, yes, they can kick you out unless you want to sue them. And how many of us have time for that? I just make it clear to them. I say, are you a doctor? Well, even if you are a doctor, you're not my doctor. So it's none of your business. And if you want to insist on this, not only will you never see me in your place of business again, but you'll never see anybody else that I know. Because I'll tell them about this officious interference and prying into my health background. And the bottom line is, if these people want to get rid of 30% of the population as a customer base, they're probably going to go out of business, because these small businesses who see themselves as enforcers are not going to be getting the government relief checks, just as we saw with PPP and the CARES Act. That went to the big companies. More than 50% went to 5% of the companies. So these people who think that they're going to be working on behalf of the government to enforce these regulations, that the government will appreciate that, of course they won't. LifeSite News says there is a legal difference between a journalist asking a question, because they started out by talking about Marjorie Taylor Greene. Somebody asked her a question. She says, you have no right to ask me that question because of HIPAA. And they said, well, no, they can ask anything they want. There's nothing in HIPAA that says a journalist can't ask a question to a politician. But a business asking a question to a prospective customer to determine if he or she will be served, there is a difference there. This vaccine passport issue, when we look at it, ultimately, it is whether someone has received the shot or not. And they say, well, you know, we've had some laws that have been put out in Florida. They give credit to Greg Abbott here in Texas. I haven't seen anything from Greg Abbott that really protects any of our rights, essentially, from the vaccine passport. It's been a head fake to say that the state's not going to issue any regulations, and any businesses that do business with the state are not going to be allowed to do that. But he didn't go the full extent that they did in Florida. And it was the Florida legislature. It wasn't just DeSantis. It was the Florida legislature that said, you are not going to require this from people in your place of business. But that didn't happen here in Texas. They go on to say that they think a better approach than HIPAA is to talk about Americans with Disabilities Act. Because with that, you cannot flatly refuse to provide service to a customer if they cannot prove their vaccination status. If they can say that they have health issues and cannot get vaccinated or cannot wear a mask, you need to respect the ADA. And that's why I said earlier this week, look at Biden, virtue signaling. I tweeted it out, I think it's Monday. Virtue signaling about, hey, yeah, I was part of the group that got this passed as a senator, and now I'm really proud to extend this and so forth. And I said, well, you know, apply that to people when it comes to mandatory masks and mandatory vaccines, because you have forced vaccines, forced masks on people who medically should not be taking these things. You've done it to children who have health conditions probably brought on by some of these other vaccines, autism and other issues. In California, the Unruh Act prevents businesses from unlawfully discriminating against individuals based upon, quote, medical condition. So any medical condition information that the businesses unnecessarily gather from customers can be used against the business in a discrimination case, where plaintiffs, if you want to sue them, can recover damages, fines, and attorney fees. And in a sense, I think, you know, if we had a few of these cases where somebody really wants to spend a lot of time on it, You know, we could start doing a number like the trainees have done on Christian business people, right? Maybe we should. I just, that's not how I want to spend my life in court. But if you like going to court, you like suing somebody, and if you want to do it yourself, I guess, because it's going to be an expense, maybe you could find a lawyer who would do it for you take any of the awards just so that you can make the point. But it would be a very expensive thing if you wanted to run the lawsuit. It's not clear that inquiring customers' vaccination status is at all profitable, they conclude. Yeah, that's right. That's the key thing that we have, our status as customers. Like, you want to do this as a small businessman, you're selling the rope that will hang you. That's the rope of mandates. The case for vaccine passports is strong, says Michael Gove in the UK. This is a guy who is nominally a conservative. That's what he calls himself, part of the Conservative Party. Michael Gove there says there is, quote, a strong case for the introduction of vaccine passports in appropriate locations, such as football matches, arguing everything we can do in order to reduce COVID transmission, we should. He hopes that in, quote, some form of certification will be introduced across all four nations in the UK. This, he says, is the right way to go. Under government plans, someone who is fully vaccinated but has COVID will be allowed into large venues. But someone who is unvaccinated yet doesn't have COVID will be barred. Did you hear that? Let me repeat that for you. If you are double vaxxed but sick with COVID, you can go to a nightclub, points out Hugh Osman. But if you test negative and are not vaccinated, you can't go. So we're being treated worse than diseased vaccinated people. Because why? Because we're hateful vermin, right? This is an outrageous proposal, says Steve Baker. He says this could split the Tory party irretrievably. And it should. This is the dividing line. How can you call yourself a conservative if you don't support any individual choice on this matter in health issues? They said it is an outrageous proposal, one that doesn't seem likely to do any good. Who are they now trying to coerce? Whose education are they now trying to deny? I believe the government is in terrible danger of splitting the Tory party irretrievably. After all, we have been through with Brexit. Professor Robert West, a behavioral scientist who advises the government on COVID policy, warned that the plan could spectacularly backfire. He said using a sort of stick approach as opposed to a carrot and stick approach, I think, is a mistake. But that's where these people are. This is like the old story about the, a snake, some kind of venomous animal, talks the turtle into swimming him across the river. They get halfway across, and the animal bites him to kill him. And he goes, "Why'd you do that? Now we're both going to die." You know, he goes, "It's just in my nature." It's in the nature of the Democrats, even though it would be to their advantage to use carrots. You know, if you're a behavioral scientist like Robert West, he would be familiar with operant conditioning, B.F. Skinner's operant conditioning. B.F. Skinner was much more effective at training animals because he would give them positive conditioning. He was very much against the idea of the whole bad dog, you know, your dog does the wrong thing and you whack him, you know. He says, no, you watch him and first of all, you get him accustomed to the clicker. You click and treat, click and treat, click and treat. So they associated in a Pavlovian way the sound of the clicker to a treat. And then after a while, you don't even have to give them the treat. It's just the sound of the clicker. So that's another aspect of this, right? You know, they tell us something to do, and they give us a treat. You know, they pronounce something they want you to do through CNN or whatever. And after a while, they didn't even have to give you the treat. They just tell you what you should be doing through CNN. But going back to the conditioning, you know, you do that, you get them accustomed to the click sound. And then you just watch the animal, and when they do the behavior that you want, whether it's accidental or not, you click it. It's like, oh, you liked that. Oh, okay, that was something you wanted. And as you do it enough, and they've trained all types of animals, you know, dogs, animals that are thought to be pretty much unresponsive to training, of course, dolphins and things like that, but even you know, animals that don't pick up on training too much. And they were able to do that very effectively. And they said, you know, after a while, when it clicks with the animal, and it takes longer for the less intelligent, more biddable or less biddable animals to catch on, but eventually all of them do. But when they realize what the game is, they'll all start throwing you behavior. They'll throw baby. Is this what you want? Is this? That's where they want everybody. See, in the book Beyond Freedom and Dignity that B.F. Skinner wrote, and of course he experimented famously on his own children. He believed that they were animals. He believed that that was all that any of us are. It's simply animals. We're not created in the image of God. There's nothing that makes us unique or special as humans. We're just to be treated as animals. And so he focused on the animal nature that we all have, the flesh. And he found out how he could manipulate it. And so this behavioral scientist knows that. He says, this can backfire. If you're going to give people sticks, that's not good. Give them carrots and sticks. Actually, it's better just to give them carrots, but he knows exactly what this is about. He said, when you just start to give them sticks only, like Leanna Wynn, who just cannot. It's in her nature. It's just in her nature that she wants to punish and hurt people. This former CEO of Planned Parenthood, now full-time commentator on CNN, talking about how we got to give sticks to people. We got to beat them with sticks. Don't let them out. You make them get the vaccine. Don't let them have any freedom. You give them the stick, no carrot, right? So he said, when you start to do that, you start to create resentment. See, if you just beat an animal, you create a vicious dog if you do that. You don't treat them or anything. You just beat them all the time. And that's what it's what the Democrats want to do, even though it would serve them better to do positive operant conditioning. You know, we look at pit bulls, for example. I mean, you know, you can have a very friendly pit bull, but they have a certain nature that the people who train them, you know, it's a combination of nature and training, of nature and nurture, nature and nurture. Those two things come together. And so you can take a dog that does have the power, the capability of being very powerful and very vicious, and you can accentuate that nature. I've seen it happen. I'll never forget. I'll just tell you the short story here. We had a situation. It was years after my father had died. My sister had passed away also, who had been managing the property in Florida. It was a mortgage that my father had owned the house and sold it to some people. They decided that they would rent it out. And then the people that they rented it out, it's a very small house, and the people they rented it out to stopped paying the money. They stopped paying the mortgage, and they said, just take it back. We don't care. So I took the whole family down to see what we needed to do legally with it and clean the place up, and it was an unbelievable mess. They had, in their backyard, it had pit bulls, and they had the training mechanism there where they would get the pit bulls to jump on it and they'd swing them around on a rope while they were grabbing onto it with their teeth. They had in the living room, they had the remains of a dead rabbit that they had just abandoned in the cage and not fed. They had all kinds of filth like that in the house. And I got very sick cleaning it up, actually. And then in the backyard, they still had two of these pit bulls. And they had them under horrific conditions. I mean, it's pretty hot in Florida. They had them in this shed where they couldn't get out and use a bathroom. They had a tiny hole where they could get fresh air. And, I mean, it was tiny. So we called animal control. And they came out. And they had a police officer. The police officer, these dogs, when they tried to look in the hole, you know, trying to get through the hole, they were pretty vicious. So they stuck a rod in there to try to get a hold of them and try to get something around their neck and try to get them under control so they could open up the door and somebody else could get another one around them so they could get them out. And the police officer got up in the tree and pulled his revolver out just in case things got out of hand. I mean, it was pretty tense. They did get them out of there without anybody getting hurt. But as they were doing it, somebody pulls up and he goes, "Hey, man, what are you doing to Jose's dogs, man? Jose's going to be he's going to be very upset with you." We go inside, and one of the things that we're cleaning up is this closet. The place was pretty much empty except for the dead rabbits and filth and stuff like that. And in the closet, he had a big box filled with martial arts trophies, an empty gun magazine, and some hypodermic needles. It's like, whoa, pit bulls, guns, drugs, martial arts. This guy is, I think I know what he's into. And so, you know, but God was good. We got we got that stuff taken care of and got out of there. Yeah, we will not forget that experience. So much for training animals. Conservative MP suggests the government should continue mandating flu vaccination for young people in order to attend venues. Yes, of course, that's what this has always been, right? And when you look at the UK, you had, and I think this is very interesting. I want you to hear this caller who calls in. This is a, and I don't really know what the station, LBC. I know that they had Nigel Farage on there, right, LBC. And I know he said something that wasn't politically correct, and they kicked him off. And so I want you to hear this guy takes a call, and he says, you know, the problem with these young people who won't take the vaccine is they're just lazy. They're just lazy. And here's a conservative MP saying, yeah, we got to mandate flu vaccinations. That's what he called them, for young people to attend venues, because that's exactly what this is. This whole process, and I've said that, I watched this and reported on this for years before 2020, and everybody at InfoWars had, and to some degree or the other. I mean, you know, Mike Adams had talked about it, Alex Jones had talked about it. Why did they just ignore and pretend that they didn't know what was going on through this whole process? Why did they cheer and say, this is a dangerous thing from China. We've got to lock everything down. We've got to put the mask on. Fauci is not telling people they've got to put the mask on. We've got to put the mask on sooner, you know, not later. If you don't wear the mask, they're going to force you to take the vaccine, said Adams. It's like, are you kidding me? But yeah, it was always the game that they ran for the flu vaccine, telling everybody without doing any tests how many people were dying of the flu, go ahead and take the flu shot. Well, how did you know in advance what strain of flu you're going to be? Oh, it doesn't matter. Just take it. We do make these things up months in advance. We don't know what the flu strain is going to be. There's always a different strain. And that's why if you understand that, you know there's always going to be some other variant that they're going to come up with, right? They would manufacture, they would go through and they would vote. They would vote in a committee what strain of flu they thought was going to be predominant for this year. Months before they would ever put the thing. So they would vote, they'd pick a strain, and then they would manufacture that strain, and that would be that year's flu shot. Now, of course, you could get a strain that didn't even exist before, right? And there was, and it was always changing every year. That's why they can now play this variant game. That's why all of this was predictable. You don't have to be a prophet. You just have to look at what these people have done every single year. And the idea is that they couldn't scare people into getting the flu vaccination. And so, you know, they decided that they would mandate it through this particular approach. But I want you to hear this conversation as a caller calls in to the host at LBC in London.
John's in Manchester. You work in a vaccination centre, do you, John? Good morning.
Yeah, morning, Nick. Great show as always.
That's very kind of you. How many young people are turning up where you are?
Not a great deal. I was picking up the point that Prof said before the break about young people not being lazy. I think I'd have to beg to differ. Can I give you just a quick stat?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, go ahead.
We sent out an invitation to 10,000 youngsters between 18 and 30. Mm-hmm. We geared up a whole vaccination centre. Doctors gave out their weekend nurses. You can imagine the whole logistical exercise involved.
Massive.
Yeah. Fewer than 200 took up the opportunity, of which less than 100 turned up. It was incredible.
So all that medical staff and folk, everybody sitting around ready to go.
Ranging premises, it was just... What we actually did in our hours, we rang a few of the people up, you know, mobile phone connection, and we asked them, you know, why haven't you responded? And the range of answers is incredible. I don't know where the centre is. I haven't got the bus fare. I'd have to change buses. I've got to walk the dog. I've got to water the plants. I've probably had COVID already. Mm. It's astonishing. They are lazy. They are lazy.
Well, I don't know. No, hang on. You can't say that everybody aged 18 to 29 is lazy.
A huge number of them can't be bothered equals lazy.
Yeah, exactly. These ungrateful people, we've done everything we can. We sent out, 10,000 invitations, and we only had 1 out of 100 people show up, right? 100 people showed up, so that's 1% showed up. The other 99%, you know, these people are so stupid and ungrateful, he says. It's like, well, I've got something else to do. I think I need to, trim my toenails or something that day. They're giving them excuses. These are not real reasons. I was like, who are you to call me and question me as to why I need to go down to get a vaccine? These kids know exactly what they're doing, fortunately. They know, first of all, because they've been told for the last year, that it's not an emergency for them. So why would they get an emergency use authorization vaccine? Absolutely no reason whatsoever. But that's the way they're pushing this. They're trying to shame the 18 to 30-year-olds. Maybe the 18 to 30-year-olds have noticed that in the U.K., there have been nearly 20,000 people reported dead, 1.5 million people, half of those serious with injuries from the vaccine. Or maybe they've seen the statistics that we keep here in the U.S., or maybe they've seen what has happened in the U.K. Maybe they actually are informed and can't be shamed into this. That's the key point right there. Canadian airports will no longer segregate travelers based on vaccine status. They say that the Vancouver International Airport and the Toronto Airport have ended a controversial policy that segregated vaccinated and unvaccinated travelers into separate lines upon entering customs. Effective immediately, passengers entering Canada from the U.S. or another international destination will no longer be separated based on vaccination status prior to reaching customs. Dual lines for vaccinated and non- or partially vaccinated travelers entering Canada was to streamline border clearance process, as there's different requirements for each. So there's still different requirements, but they just don't want you to see that they're segregating people according to that. You know, I'm sure that some of these 18 to 29-year-olds decided that they could do without having a heart attack as well. That might have played into it. We'll be right back. The Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. TheDavidKnightShow.com.
Sometimes your day needs a little smoothing. Check out the Jazz Channel at APSradio.com and the APS Radio app and leave the stress behind.
But about humor and the humorous tyrants who seek to censor us. I've never seen anything more amazing, and I don't remember where I got this. This is the actual document. It's not from an article. It's not embedded in an article. Maybe I saw the link somewhere. But I read this this morning. This is from the Radicalization Awareness Network from the European Commission. They said, and this is the title of it, "It's not funny anymore. Far-right extremists are using humor." Humor has become a central weapon of extremist movements to subvert open societies. Oh, I wonder who is actually funding this, if they're talking about open society. Would this be money from George Soros, perhaps? They go on to say these recent developments pose major challenges for practitioners. Practitioners, what are they talking about? They continue to use this term practitioners. One of these things that, like stakeholders, right? Stakeholders, the people who get to make the decisions for you. Well, these practitioners are the people who are going to put all of this censorship stuff into practice. So what they're doing is they're explaining this to their little Ministry of Truth apparatchiks who are going to be the ones going out there stamping out humor everywhere they can find it in the name of political correctness. Oh, and they double down on political correctness. Political correctness is good. They love political correctness. I mean, since the 90s, people were joking about political correctness. What surprised me about this is that they embrace that as a positive good. They love that label. They didn't even try to run from it. I mean, typically the left, when they get caught with their hands in the cookie jar philosophically on something, they will at least try to change the terms. They'll steal positive terms from somebody else. But that's not the case here. They're embracing this. Anyway, they say these recent developments of humor pose major challenges for practitioners. As a new generation of violent extremists emerges from digital subcultures without a clear organizational center, prevention strategies need to renew focus and cope with the intangible nature of online culture. Let me comment. They say what we're looking for is we want to find a clear organizational center. And this is why I stress decentralized, autonomous, local pushback against these people, resistance, whatever you want to call it. That is the asymmetric warfare. If we create something that is a centralized organization, they will infiltrate it. They will trap some of the people who are not too bright in that, as you've seen over and over by the FBI. They will shut down. They will co-opt, take over, infiltrate with agent provocateurs, and completely take down any centralized organization. And that's why when we talk about Christian denominations and even conventions like the Southern Baptist, when you create a centralized organization, it is ripe to be corrupted from the top down and taken over. And that we've seen that happen over and over again, just from a religious standpoint, but it happens from a political standpoint as well. If they can determine where the center is, who's organizing this, who's the leader, you have to have a leaderless resistance. You have to have an autonomous resistance. You have to have a decentralized resistance, and it's got to be local. Everything happens locally. And that's what's freaking these people out. We can't find who's creating all these different memes. Where is the jokester? Where's the joker, you know? Where's the joker that's writing all this stuff that's making us look so bad? Well, it isn't one person. There's a lot of people who are doing it. And that's what's giving them the fits. That's what they can't handle. So what are we going to do about this? They said, well, thinking of far-right extremism, we might associate this with backward-looking, stiff and formal zealots. No, that's what they are. They're backward-looking. They're stiff. They're formal. They're zealots. These are people who are steeped in 19th century Marxism. Yeah, they've added some bells and whistles to it, but that only makes it more awkward. I guess you could call this section of the document here, you might be a far-right extremist if a shared sense of humor has become an effective tool in terms of immersing individuals into extremist ideologies, and as a consequence, contributed to some of the worst acts of violence in the 21st century. See, there you go. I guess you didn't know that Hitler, Mao, and Stalin were really funny guys. I mean, it had nothing to do with authoritarian dictators in power. Humorless authoritarian dictators in power. No, it was these comedians. Hitler, Mao, Stalin, you know, they had late-night talk show on ABC, CBS, and NBC, like Stephen Colbert. But they were probably a lot funnier than Stephen Colbert. So reflect on how these countermeasures are needed to adapt to combat extremism. That's right, countermeasures. In other words, humorless censorship. Humor and far-right extremism, a primer. I mean, these people, you talk about stiff, formal, clueless people, they have to define for their practitioners, the people are going to put this into practice, they have to define for them terms like memes and memes like red pill. They actually go through this document to explain all this stuff to people. They said, they began, because they are aware of Saul Alinsky and his rules for radicals, because, you know, that's what they follow. That's their blueprint. Except that they're not capable of doing ridicule. Unfortunately for them, they can't remember that. I keep that up there. They explain the difference between Pepe, Doge, and the NPC characters there. They got to explain that to their practitioners as well. But, you know, going back to Saul Alinsky, the most potent weapon known to mankind are satire and ridicule. And these people, obviously, are incapable of either of those. And, of course, he went on to say, because there's no defense against them. I said, this advice has been key to winning hearts and minds of people, especially by the progressive movements. As through humor, much is accepted that would have been rejected if presented seriously. I'm sorry, but I've never seen anybody who identifies, self-identifies as being progressive or liberal, I've never seen them actually embrace comedy. They typically want to grab you by the lapel and tell you what you must do. That's the thing that really characterizes the progressives and liberals. They know better than you, and they're going to tell you everything that you need to do. There's no humor in that. That's humorless. They go on to say, recent generations of far-right extremists have chosen transgressive humor. Well, what is that? Well, that's something that they don't like. And supposed satire as central weapons in the fight against liberal democracy and its political correctness. Again, you keep using that term, liberal and democracy, and I don't think you really understand what it is. I mean, liberal was supposed to be somebody that supported freedom, liberty, right? Comes from liberty. So liberals in the 19th century, in the 1800s, supported freedom of speech and all of the liberties that we talk about as civil liberties. They also supported economic liberty. We had a split, if you will, in the early 20th century because of J. Edgar Hoover, because of the Palmer raids, that he was a apparatchik in terms of enforcing that. It was Palmer who pushed that out, and because J. Edgar Hoover was so effective at it, he worked his way up politically, eventually got in charge of the FBI. But that's where he earned his wings, so to speak, was in the Palmer raids. And these were things that came about because Woodrow Wilson wanted to get us involved in World War I. And so the people who had, in the past, supported economic freedom as well as civil liberties, you had a very, very strong division at that point. There'd been something of a division simply because of people's greed, willing to compromise on liberty issues, but it became very pronounced during the war. And so that's why you typically see conservatives today only supporting the right to earn money. And liberals used to be the ones who would support your civil liberties like free speech, but they don't anymore. There's nobody supporting civil liberties in either group anymore. And quite frankly, if you look at what's happening with the conservatives, the taxes and the welfare and the crony capitalism, they don't support economic liberty either. Neither one of those. So, again, in the absence of a centralized target, what are the characteristics that we can attack is basically what they're asking. Well, it's people who have humor and satire, which are weapons against political correctness, which they embrace. They say political correctness is depicted as prudish and patronizing, because it is. It's obvious to everybody. It has been for decades. Praising a politically incorrect attitude, humor has been weaponized as a form of resistance against a political culture that is supposedly curtailing free speech. Think about this. This entire document is about curtailing free speech. And they say supposedly. Supposedly curtailing. Their entire document is purposed towards that. In persuasive terms, humor is especially attractive for extremist groups given its effect on the following. On emotions, on cognition, on communication. Do you see how wooden these people are? I mean, they're going to have to define what memes are. They've got to define what some of the popular memes are for these people, these practitioners, these humorless, faceless little bureaucrats, these NPCs who are going to be going out and enforcing this. And they're, you know, humor has these different elements involved. I know you don't understand it, but let me try to explain it to you. Emotions, cognition, and communication. Let me illustrate what these guys are like. They're kind of little robots, like the comedian Mr. Zed imitates.
Well, what kind of audience do we have here this evening? Anyone on a first date? Good! Any football supporters? Good! Anyone from out of town?
Yes!
Good! Where are you from, sir? Good! Always glad to meet someone from your town. Perhaps it would be best to reveal some of the safety features of this studio. In the event that a joke should be told tonight that's just too sophisticated or highbrow, comedy manuals will fall from compartments immediately above your seats. In the unlikely event that this act should really stink, exits are located on the sides of the room. We appreciate your patronage and look forward to servicing you.
Yeah, there you go. It's that mechanical. This document reminds me of a guy imitating a robot. It's formulaic, it's humorless, and they say that, you know, they accuse us, the political correctness, they accuse us of supposedly wanting to curtail and censor free speech. But here's how we need to curtail and censor free speech. They say far-right extremism and online culture, the relationship between humor and extremism has been reinforced. In the digital context, where missing gestures and intonation leave much more space for interpretation to the individual consumer of content. See, you can't read the body language of the robot that's there. The internet is serious business is the first one that they take on. And they say, well, this is actually supposed to be ironic. But see, they take the internet very seriously. It is serious. It is the life log. It is Big Brother, where they can watch you. And so the people who are out there saying, I better not make any jokes out here because, you know, the internet is serious business. That's become an ironic meme. I'll define meme for you in just a moment here. The meaning of which is actually the exact opposite. Oh, see, that's what irony means. So first they define for you what irony means, and then they're going to define for you what a meme is. But their attempts to try to define humor, they never can quite make it to that. Which is to say, the internet is not serious business at all, and anyone who thinks otherwise should be corrected and ridiculed. Yeah, and they have a footnote for that. Memes, they say, are cultural units of meaning. Oh, you know, as if don't tread on meme. That's one. They don't explain that one. That would be probably the next class. This is censorship 101. Humorless censorship 101. Humorless censorship 102. They'll explain puns on their own memes and how that is used by the decentralized opposition. So then they go through these three pictures that I was showing you earlier. The NPC, Doge, and Pepe. So the NPC, they say, the aim here is to show that normies do not question the information that comes from mainstream press and politics. Going to the next one, the Doge meme. One of the most famous internet memes, to tease a kind of outdated humor and style of individuals. Then Pepe the Frog, a kind of anti-elite arrogance and condescension, has become an icon. The creation and sharing of memes as a ritual of this community can foster a feeling of collective belongings amongst those who participate in rather dispersed online networks. I mean, this is... this document is just beyond belief. Infamous image boards, such as 4chan and 8chan. And in social media, it is often hard to tell if the actors involved are organized or not, and if certain far-right actions are collective or if they're individual. As an organizational center, see how they keep coming back to this? This is their Achilles heel. The fact that they cannot imagine anything that is not hierarchical, top-down, centrally organized. They have absolutely no way to fight it. This is why the Pentagon has lost every war they've been involved in since World War II. They have no concept of asymmetric warfare. They have no concept of distributed resistance. And they have no humor. An organizational center seems to be absent. And extremist tendencies largely function organically online. Sociologist Ganesh refers to this phenomenon as a digital hate culture. Yeah, because they can't understand it because they hate it. It's hateful, right? These humorless people call everything they don't understand, everything that doesn't kowtow to them, that's filled with hate. The fluidity of these hate cultures makes efforts to control them almost futile. That's right. I want to say to all these humorless practitioners out there, resistance is futile. Surrender. The joke's on you. So-called swarms make it difficult to determine which kind of online behavior is organized and which is driven by organic bottom-up processes. And then they look at the varieties of humor in the alt-right area or the online hashtag campaigns to bolster support for a populist right-wing party during elections, or trolling or abusive campaigns against targeted individuals. Wait a minute, I thought those were all the strategies of the left. You get a hashtag campaign out there about a political party or a cause that Twitter doesn't like, and they shut it down. I thought it was the abusive campaigns against targeted individuals. I thought that was the hallmark of the cancel mobs. And yet they say that we're doing it, right? We're doing it. Embracing and believing in this new reality is seen within the far-right extremist scene as red-pilling. Now they have to explain what red-pilling is to these clueless practitioners. This process describes a political awakening that empowers individuals by helping them to realize that racial diversity is the central dividing line on which societies are built. We should not have diversity? I thought these people were for diversity. And then they give you the definition of red pill, which you already know, so I won't. You're not as clueless as these practitioners. So they talk about the mainstream media. They consider Twitter and Facebook to be mainstream media, and of course they are. Those who call out the far right are often vilified, trolled further, accused of being oversensitive. We would never think these people are oversensitive or humorless. On the other hand, shutting people down and deplatforming them can lead to reinforcing the narrative that free speech is limited to mainstream elites and potentially rally more support for the far right. Yeah, it actually does blow back on you, doesn't it? When people can see what you're doing and you've defined what you want to do. So they say, we've got to be careful. And then they have to explain for these people what deplatforming is. I don't need anybody to explain it to me. I've lived it. Practitioners often underestimate the role of digital and meme culture, as they're not important in their everyday life, these practicing censors. So they recommend for the practitioners how they can improve their literacy, how they can monitor things better, and how they can deal with extremist humor. Listen to this. So here's how you can improve your literacy about humor. Develop and support more resources aimed at understanding vibrant online cultures. And of course, when we talk about getting more resources, that means getting more money, right? Improve literacy with regard to memes, codes, and symbols. So study them very carefully when you get that extra money. Build effective partnerships with the technology sector, because they'll be the ones who'll be doing the surreptitious censoring, the surreptitious deplatforming for you. Few things play more into the far-right activist's hands like a scandalized, outraged reaction that misses the point entirely. What would they be talking about? Would that be like the 4chan campaign where they said on Halloween a few years ago when we weren't mandated to wear masks, they said, yeah, put on a Halloween mask and then create some signs that say, it's okay to be white. Put that up on all the different polls around the universities and watch the people freak out and show what they really are. That was a great campaign. Who created that? I don't know. Some person had the idea, and it organically came up, and it showed these people for what they are. Racist, bigoted, humorless practitioners. So they have some other bullet items here. Make sure that you quarantine extremist humor. That wouldn't be censoring, right? Because they said, they accuse us of censorship. No, we're just quarantining extremist humor. Debunk harmful content. That helps when you can censor people, when you can quarantine people, and you can put forward experts. Understand the motivations behind why people are sharing certain toxic content in order to determine points of intervention. See, in other words, if people are upset, you don't need to look at this and say, why are people upset with what I'm doing and change your behavior? No, no, no. It's where can you interject and coerce people? Just double down, right? Where can we put a stick against them? Be able to identify different far-right codes and imagery that is humorous. Understand the dissemination strategies as well as the different target audiences. Yeah, I mean, it's just amazing to me to see how wooden this whole thing is. But, you know, Rowan Atkinson and John Cleese, formerly of the Monty Python, they've spoken a great deal about this because this has been going on for years. And they've been putting laws in for years. Here's what Rowan Atkinson had to say about this. You know, Mr. Bean. He said, oh, no, actually, he said this.
My starting point when it comes to the consideration of any issue relating to free speech is my passionate belief that the second most precious thing in life is the right to express yourself freely. The most precious thing in life, I think, is food in your mouth. And the third most precious is a roof over your head. But a fixture for me in the number two slot is free expression, just below the need to sustain life itself. That is because I have enjoyed free expression in this country all my professional life and fully expect to continue to do so. Personally, I suspect highly unlikely to be arrested for whatever laws exist to contain free expression because of the undoubtedly privileged position that is afforded to those of a high public profile. So my concerns are less for myself and more for those more vulnerable because of their lower profile. Like the man arrested in Oxford for calling a police horse gay. Or the teenager arrested for calling the Church of Scientology a cult. Or the cafe owner arrested for displaying passages from the Bible on a TV screen. When I heard of some of these more ludicrous offences and charges, I remembered that I had been here before in a fictional context. I once did a show called Not the 9 o'clock News some years ago, and we did a sketch where Griff Rhys-Jones played Constable Savage, a manifestly racist police officer to whom I, as his station commander, is giving a dressing down for arresting a black man on a whole string of ridiculous, trumped up and ludicrous charges. The charges for which Constable Savage arrested Mr. Winston Kadogo of 55 Mercer Road were these. Walking on the cracks in the pavement. Walking in a loud shirt in a built-up area during the hours of darkness. And one of my favorites, walking around all over the place. He was also arrested for urinating in a public convenience and looking at me in a funny way. Who would have thought that we would end up with a law that would allow life to imitate art so exactly? I read somewhere a defender of the status quo claiming that the fact that the gay horse case was dropped after the arrested man refused to pay the fine, and that the Scientology case was also dropped at some point during the court process, was proof that the law was working well, ignoring the fact that the only reason these cases were dropped was because of the publicity that they had attracted. The police sensed that ridicule was just around the corner and withdrew their actions. But what about the thousands of other cases that did not enjoy the oxygen of publicity, that weren't quite ludicrous enough to attract media attention? Even for those actions that were withdrawn, people were arrested, questioned, taken to court, and then released. You know, that isn't a law working properly. That is censoriousness of the most intimidating kind, guaranteed to have, as Lord Deer says, a chilling effect on free expression and free protest.
All right, and we're going to take a quick break. And, of course, you can hear where he is coming with that. And I'll just give you a follow-up. That was 2 years ago, 6 months ago. Rowan Atkinson said, the problem we have online is that an algorithm decides what we want to see. It ends up creating a simplistic binary view of society. It becomes a case of either you're with us or against us. And if you're against us, you deserve to be canceled. It is important that we're exposed to a wide spectrum of opinion. But what we have now is the digital equivalent of the medieval mob roaming the streets looking for someone to burn. And that's exactly what this is, this mechanical censorship and this mob looking for somebody to burn. We will be right back. Stay with us. common man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. TheDavidKnightShow.com.
If you like the Eagles,
on a dark desert highway,
the Cars, and Huey Lewis in the News,
they say the hotter rock and roll is still beating.
You'll love the Classic Hits channel at APS Radio. Download our app or listen now at APSradio.com.
All right, and as we're going to talk about Christian persecution coming up here, they've got a new term. They call it gaytheism, just in case you don't understand where the attack is coming from. And also got some headline news I want to get into. But before I do, I just want to finish up with a mask because, as I said yesterday, they stole the thunder from the January the 6th Dog and Pony Show and the Nancy Pelosi Inquisition Committee. They stole that thunder by issuing a mask recommendation and saying that even the people who are vaccinated now need to wear masks. You have NBC saying CDC recommends the vaccinated wear masks in areas with low vaccination rates. And then you have Fox News jumping in with a map, and they've got the color-coded map. If it's a lot of cases, we got cases here, cases everywhere, cases, deltas, we got deltas here. We got to change. And if it's, we don't know where their data is, they don't show us the data. You know, even when they show us data from the CDC's VAERS system, we're not supposed to comment on it or you get shut down, right? I've had tweets of mine blocked on Twitter for talking about the CDC's own data. You do not look at the data. You do not comment on the data. If you're even allowed to see the data, you go to Fox and you go to CNN and you see what they're telling you and how you're supposed to understand the data that you're not allowed to see. COVID-19 transmission rates by state. Fox News put this together. And with the beginning of the article by saying fully vaccinated individuals should now wear masks in certain indoor areas, according to the CDC. The CDC rolled out new mask guidance yesterday amid, quote, worrisome new science. New science. Let me tell you, new science is worrisome, isn't it? Scroll down and you can see the map that Fox News is showing people. A little bit further down, you see the U.S. map. Showing that the Delta variant behaves uniquely different from past strains of the virus. And how do we know that? Well, again, we don't. They're not testing for it. They don't have a test. They just admitted that their CDC, the PCR test, doesn't work. But they're still going to use it for another 6 months or 5 months. They're going to go to the end of December. But they admitted that it doesn't work, which is what I've been telling you for the last year. This is kind of like the admission that, oh, you know, the Wuhan biosafety level 4 lab was right there. Maybe it had something to do with that rather than a bat market or whatever. The obvious connections they want to deny. And so as they show you that map, and you can pull that map up again, see everything is red. Everything is dangerous. Be very, very afraid. See, look at that. Which masks protect against Delta COVID-19 variant, asks Fox News. Oh, yeah, because, you know, it's very deadly. So don't we have a mask that can protect us? I mean, if you're going to make the vaccinated say, well, your vaccine doesn't work, so now we're back to the mask. But wait a minute, the mask didn't work to start with, right? That's why we had to get the vaccine. They're talking in circles. And so Fox News dutifully puts up which masks protect against the Delta COVID-19 variant. And then they quote Scott Gottlieb, Trump's FDA commissioner, who's now sitting on the board of Pfizer. He says, well, it's not more airborne, and it's not more likely to be permeable to the mask. He doesn't say that the masks don't work, right? He says, well, it's not going to be any more airborne than the other ones were, and it's not going to be any more permeable than the other ones were. And, of course, we've had, as I pointed out the other day, there were 42 studies that were put together, if I remember the number correctly, I think 30, that said it absolutely makes no difference, and here's why. They were all done in the last year. We've had studies that were done before last year that showed that masks didn't make any difference. And why? Because it's predominantly done airborne, and it is too small to be seen. I mean, at the same time, these people want to say, well, it's the spittle particles. And again, you get your, even your N95 mask gets saturated with spittle particles, as I pointed out in 2002 in Australia. But you had Duke in August of last year saying, yeah, and it gets forced out. The air gets forced out around the sides and everywhere. No matter how much you try to tape it down, it gets forced out. You had Drudge Report putting up all this fear porn. Remember that? Where they showed pictures and look, you know, somebody sneezes in a big box store and it just goes everywhere. It travels for miles and it stays airborne for hours. How does it do that if it's a spit particle? They're telling you on the one hand that it's an aerosol transmission. And if it's an aerosol transmission, like the analogy that the guy used that I reported Monday, he said it's kind of like shooting BBs at a scaffolding. It might hit something on the scaffolding, but it's going to go right through for the most part. And that's exactly what we're talking about here. It's an even better analogy than saying you're going to use a chain link fence to stop mosquitoes. You're not going to do that. And so now they're back saying, well, he says it's not any more airborne. It's not any more permeable. But, you know, the masks are set up to filter 95% of particles entering the masks. That's not true. That's what Fox News is telling you. And that's not true. It's set up to catch 95% of the particles that are bigger than a certain size. And that certain size is orders of magnitude bigger than the virus particle itself. It's not going to catch 95% of those particles. It's going to be like shooting BB through scaffolding. But they pretend. Why? Because, as you see, the picture at the top of it, it's got Dr. Mark Siegel, the pharmaceutical salesperson, the guy that's been doing all this stuff on Tucker Carlson and going down and talking to Trump about when the vaccine's going to be ready, you're going to take the vaccine, that guy. Shameless pharmaceutical whore. That's all he is. Yeah, he probably got a degree at a medical school somewhere, but he doesn't care about anything other than the money. That's all that we're looking at here. As they talk about the Delta variant, Fox News goes on to say more than 46% of U.S. counties, going back to that red U.S. Map that they had, 46% of U.S. counties are grappling with high community transmission, 17% of counties experiencing substantial spread. Anybody dying? Well, no, not according to the CDC. There are safe, effective, and cheap treatments, and there is no reason for anybody to be dying from this. And they have not done the autopsies to prove that they're dying from it. They give them a test, which they now admit is not reliable, but they're going to continue to use it for another 5 months on the basis of that unreliable test. If you died with a positive number from that unreliable test, you died from COVID. That is the basis of the so-called pandemic. Biden's CDC mask announcement overshadows the January 6th commission launch, as Breitbart points out. And again, the story that I gave you yesterday, the headline, I'll read it to you again from Babylon Bee, summarized it perfectly with a picture of Fauci. It says, to defeat the Delta variant, experts recommend doing all the things that didn't work the first time. Right? Why are we here? I mean, they wore the mask. These people wore the mask. These people wore the vaccine. They took the vaccine and wore the mask at the same time, and they're still sick. And we're getting more people sick where these paranoid, obedient slaves are located than in other areas. But, you know, keep doing that. Do that over and over again. Rinse and repeat. Rinse and repeat. You have Team Biden struggling to explain the call for the CDC Americans to wear the vaccine again. As a matter of fact, at a press conference, you had Peter Ducey, who, again, understand, he's not fighting for your freedom. He's fighting for you to have faith in vaccines from pharmaceutical companies, his sponsor. We've seen the same thing happen. Mark Siegel, who has been hawking this stuff, these toxins everywhere. Mark Siegel is very upset and has gone on one Fox show after the other saying, what is the matter with them? Why aren't they letting us go about our lives? We've taken the vaccine. The vaccine, you should have confidence and faith in the vaccine. Trust the vaccine. It's your savior. And yet these people are saying, even though you've had the vaccine, we're still going to mask you. That makes their vaccine look bad. That's why Fox News is doubling down on it. But take a look at this back and forth between Biden's press secretary, Jen Psaki, and Peter Ducey, Steve Ducey's son.
Still, then why do vaccinated people need to put the masks back on?
Well, Peter, first of all, I would say again, just to go back to this chart, which I will handily point to again, if you were vaccinated, it can save your life. And I think the clear data shows that this pandemic is killing, is hospitalizing, is making people very sick who are not vaccinated. That still continues to be the case, regardless of what the mask guidance looks like.
The vaccines work, which this sign says that they do. Then why do people who have had the vaccine need to now wear masks the same as people who have not had it?
Because the public health leaders in our administration have made the determination based on data that that is a way to make sure they're protected, their loved ones are protected, and that's an extra step given the transmissibility of the virus that people that they're advising people.
Again, don't confuse her with any questions that would cause her to explain or to think critically about this. What he's pointing out, he's said, you got a sign up there that says vaccines work. Yeah, we're selling the vaccines on Fox News. We're telling people that they work. Why would you tell people then with your mask mandates that they don't work? She says, because the public health leaders in our administration have made the determination based on data. So there you go. No need for any critical thinking here. You're thinking too much. Just obey. Just do what we say. We are public health leaders. We are the administration. We are science. Don't question us. Don't question us. We're not going to show you the data either, by the way. Our responsibility here is always to lead with science. Well, science involves critical thinking. It involves logic. It involves questioning assumptions. It involves skepticism. Why won't you give an answer to any of that? No, our responsibility here is to lead with science, to always lead with the advice of health and medical experts. That is not science. Again, that is, as Francis Bacon pointed out, he called it scholasticism. Why? Because the authorities of the day, when it came to matters of science, were the people who were in the universities. They didn't have a bloated government bureaucracy. The closest that they came to that was the universities in the days of Francis Bacon. So what he was talking about was people who identify themselves as experts, as authorities, people who have degrees, people who go to, who are at prestigious universities. No, he said, we need to have empiricism, and that was the basis of the scientific method. You show data, you take measurements, and you show that data, and you draw your conclusions based on that data. You present the data and your conclusions to other people. They are allowed to question that and to say, well, I see your data, but there's something that you missed here in your conclusion. This just doesn't add up from your data that you took. Or maybe explain to us how you took the data. Maybe there is a mistake in the way that you measured this stuff. No, you will not question any of that stuff if they even show it to you. This is all about leading with the science. And that means the advice of our medical experts. That is not science. That is not empiricism. Teachers union, of course, this is where we get to the real issue. It's the teachers union that is pushing mandatory masks and vaccines for students, because that's a big part of this. Mask and vaccine, this is, I think, one of the most reprehensible headlines that I've seen, even out of mainstream media. This is from The Hill. And it's an op-ed piece. It says, masks and vaccines, what would you do to save a child? Well, I would keep them away from masks, and I would keep them away from vaccines. That's what I would do to save a child. But this person makes the argument, what would you do to save a child? Would you step into the street to pull a child out of traffic? Would you give your hard-earned money to feed a starving child? Would you raise funds for cancer research? Would you wear a mask? How dare you put that in there as if that's going to save a child? You psychologically damage these children. You create a fear of other people. You isolate them. I mean, that is a severe psychological damage in and of itself. We've seen suicide rates soaring. But just think about that. You know, how you're harming these kids by making them afraid of other people and keeping them from seeing facial expressions that they can relate to. And then we can talk about the physiological effects after all of the psychological effects and the spiritual effects that you're doing to these kids. And that is, of course, depriving them of oxygen, giving them an increase in carbon dioxide. I've talked many times about what that does to you physically. Look it up if you don't remember. Would you wear a mask? I'm not going to wear a mask. I'm not going to take a vaccine because I am trying to save children. I've reported for far too long about the children that have been harmed by these vaccines, and they know that they're harming children. You know, the VAERS report is not just for vaccines in general. It was set up for childhood vaccine injuries. They knew they were going to injure children. Fauci knew back in 1986. And so they put this together not to save the child, but to save the pharmaceutical companies and their profits. That's what VAERS is about, protecting pharmaceutical greed, not about protecting children. Get that through your head. Get that to your grandkids and your kids who have grandkids, who have your grandkids. Get them to understand what is really involved here. Who is benefiting? It's not the kids. Just take a look at that. It's set up to protect the pharmaceutical companies from the damage that they're doing to kids. And I want to protect them from the legal dictatorship that these people are trying to lay the foundation for, to say that they can mandate a vaccine. And I said this when it was happening. I started fighting this fight in 2019 when they were doing it for measles. I said, you look at where this is going to go. It's not going to end here, and it's not. And it's not going to end with the COVID mandates either. It's going to end with the loss of every bit of freedom and dignity that you have, and that's by design. That's why I was so furious at Trump when he said they got to get the shots. Just disgusting. Just disgusting. He knew, he grew up in a generation where everybody had measles, and the side effects were very, 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 very rare, unlike these vaccines. And people who had measles have lifetime immunity. And he knows that they don't have to get the shots. He knows they could have measles as a child, and they're not harmed by that, but they are harmed by the vaccines. He knew both of those things, and he betrayed us to the pharmaceutical companies. And he did that in 2019 before he doubled down on this thing in 501 days ago on Friday the 13th. The CDC will recommend everyone in K-12 schools wear a mask, regardless of vaccination status. They're going to vaccinate these poor kids with an experimental vaccine that is not even a vaccine. It is a genetic code injection, turning their bodies into vaccine manufacturing facilities, manufacturing the most toxic part of COVID. They already know that it's giving kids heart disease. They can't explain it away for these young kids like they can people who are older. So they have to admit it. And then they say, well, it's rare. Well, it's not as rare as the problems that, you know, people got sick with measles, I'll admit it. Had serious effects, but it was a lot more rare for that to happen. That is for these kids to get the heart issues. Just understand that when they start talking about rare, they're very selective about what they want to call rare, aren't they? So CDC reverses indoor mask policy. Even if you are a double vaxxed child, vaxxed against a virus that even they say you have zero risk for it, they will still force you to wear a mask because this is about a satanic domination and destruction of our bodies as well as our liberties. Paul Offit, pediatrician and vaccine advocate. No, he's a shill. He's a corporate shill pushing this program of greed and poison. He served on the advisory panels for both the CDC and the FDA. That should tell you everything you need to know about those two corrupt organizations. He told CNBC earlier this month that the U.S. was still undervaccinated. How does he know that? Well, he doesn't. He said even people who are fully protected have cause for concern when it comes to COVID variants. It's not a bold prediction to believe that the SARS-CoV-2 is going to be circulating in 2 or 3 years from now. We know that it will never end. None of these things do. But we do get immunity. Earlier, I played the clip where these people in corporate media in London were saying, yeah, you know, those young people in Britain, we sent out 10,000 messages to these people that they needed to come in and get their vaccines. And you can't believe it. Only 1% of them came in. When we called them up to berate them as to why they didn't come in, they said, well, I've got better things to do. I don't have a ride or whatever, you know, excuse. These people are lazy. No, they know what's going on. Young Britons, according to a poll, are ditching the masks and deleting the COVID app. Remember we had the pingdemic? I said, you know, there's about 40% of the population in the UK has voluntarily downloaded an application that will watch everything that you do and then compare all of your geospatial activity history and see if some other idiot who downloaded this thing tested positive, and if you were in close proximity to that idiot who also had this on their phone, and they tested positive, you had to go into timeout. And they call it a pingdemic because it is shutting down the country worse than they did when they said, we're going to shut down this entire industry here and that entire industry there. No, even the ones that are open up, they can't keep them staffed. And so now you got the young Britons are deleting that app so they can't be traced. And they're throwing away the mask as well. A poll published on Monday showed that while 58% of the 18 to 24-year-olds were wearing masks in public places the 2 weeks before the government mandate on wearing them on public transport and indoor public places ended, now 46% are wearing them in those settings. So they've gone down from 58 to 46%. It is the lowest uptake of masks among all polled age groups, with the majority of those 25 to 49 years old, 66%, and the 50 to 64-year-olds, 73%, and the over 65s, 85% of them still wearing masks in public places. But the young people are taking it, 18 to 24-year-olds. You know, we were told that this is something for people who had an average age of 80 and 2.5 comorbidities, and so I don't think this really applies to me. It's not an emergency. Yeah. Understand that and keep going with that. We're going to be right back, and we'll talk a little bit about the January 6th Commission headline news and also about gaytheism. Yeah, that's a new thing that they're championing. We'll be right back.
The Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. TheDavidKnightShow.com.
Whether you're feeling like the blues or bluegrass, APS Radio has you covered. Check out a wide variety of channels on our app at APSradio.com.
All right, and as I was talking about the humorless censors in the EU, here in the U.S., we have Snopes. Because as I played yesterday, you could hear for yourself Joe Biden saying, my butt's been wiped. which I said is weird even for Joe Biden. And so Snopes does a fact check on that, on not on whether or not his butt's been wiped. We don't want to get into that level of investigation, do we? No, but I don't know. Did he say that? Did he say that, they said? Did Biden say my butt's been wiped? Well, I guess it depends. Maybe he said Hunter's laptop has been wiped. Maybe that's what he said. Maybe he said my memory's been wiped. I don't know what he said. But they seriously want to go into this. And they want to explain to you that perhaps he was making a joke, or perhaps he didn't say that at all, because, you know, this is Biden, and we can't really laugh at him. Maybe we can laugh along with him, but we should not laugh at him. Meanwhile, we have Chicago's mayor, Lori Lightfoot. Remember, she had a statement saying she's not going to give any interviews or allow anybody that is white to do any interviews or be any part of any press conferences, right? This is racist Marxist Lori Lightfoot. She says, you know, I look at these press conferences, and to me it looks like the 1950s. And I say, I look at Lori Lightfoot's regime. You know, she persecuted Christian churches there through the lockdown and all these other things. I said, yeah, it does look like the 1950s. But the 1950s, not in America, it looks like the 1950s in the Soviet Union. Or the 1950s in Mao's China. That's what her Chicago looks like. But, you know, back then everything was in black and white, and that's the way that she sees the world, isn't it? Everything is black and white, skin color, not in terms of moral issues. No, no, no. It failed miserably. After a wargaming loss, the Joint Chiefs of Staff are overhauling how the U.S. military will fight. Now, this is not talking about the Iraq War or the Afghanistan War or fill in the blank. No, this is talking about a simulation that they did. This is coming from Defense One. A brutal loss in a wargaming exercise last October convinced the vice chairman of the Joint Chiefs to scrap the joint warfighting concept that had guided U.S. military operations for decades. Well, you might want to start to rethink some things since you haven't won any wars for decades, so you might want to start rethinking that strategy. Without overstating the issue, it failed miserably, they said. An aggressive red team that had been studying the U.S. for the last 20 years just ran rings around us. They knew exactly what we were going to do before we did it, he said to an audience on Monday at the launch of their new and improved Emerging Technologies Institute, an effort by the military-industrial complex. Oh, wait, they call it the National Defense Industrial Association. Oh, okay, different name. An industry group to speed military modernization, in other words, to sell more equipment at inflated prices to these bureaucrat generals who can't win a fight on Twitter, as you saw from that major general. That's pretty pathetic. You know, they can't even win a fight on Twitter, let alone Afghanistan or Iraq. The Pentagon would not provide the name of the war game, which was classified, but a defense official said that one of the scenarios revolved around a battle for Taiwan. They said, we basically attempted an information dominance structure where information was ubiquitous to our forces, just like it was in the first Gulf War, just like it has been for the last 20 years. But he said, well, what happened? What happens is if right from the beginning, that information is not available. And that's the big problem we faced. So think about that. I wonder if it ever occurred to these people, and you know, we've seen this thing happening with their data. They put all of their, CIA put all their stuff, all their eggs in the Amazon basket, their data. Perhaps that's how they got Vault 7, a lot of these other things hacked and stolen. You know, you put all the information in one spot, guess what? Your opponents are going to find out how to get it. They're going to capture the flag. They're going to get all your information. And they're going to pull your pants down in public, which is what they've done to the CIAs, which they've done to the military-industrial complex. And so in response to having all of the personnel files hacked, in response to having the plan book, Vault 7, which showed how they could masquerade as any of their enemies in order to do a dirty skullduggery in terms of cyber hacks and blame it on other people, in response to all that, they decided it'd be a good idea. The Pentagon, these bright bulbs at the Pentagon, decided that it would be a good idea to centralize all of the military information. That's what this joint enterprise or something, defense, they gave it the acronym JEDI. This is the contract that Amazon was designed for Amazon by Mattis, And then it was won by Microsoft because they had more political pull. You know, these things are not designed on merit. They're designed on who's your friend, who's your buddy, who's your pal. So Microsoft wound up getting it. And then because Pelosi and her husband have been doing insider trading on that contract for Amazon, on the side of Amazon, they were able to get this thing pulled back and trade on that information as well. So, you know, Nancy Pelosi's husband has no relation to Nancy Pelosi at all, right? They were able to do insider trading on this reworking of that contract to make sure that Amazon is going to get at least half of the pie. But the bottom line is it's still going to be centralized information. And they have developed everything around electronic communications. What happens if that gets infiltrated? What happens if it gets disrupted or blocked? Well, that can't happen, they say, except that it did, even in their war games, making themselves very vulnerable. And we keep hearing, you know, these, as they put out their military propaganda films, and you remember a month or two ago, we saw the recruitment films for the Russian army, guy lifting weights, and you saw the recruitment, you know, you want a hard life, you want to get in shape and everything for the Chinese, and then you had the soft little cartoon about a cartoon girl whose mothers were lesbian, and she was transgender or whatever, and all these people... You know, when we put this out, I said, okay, so that's our opponent's military and this is our military? Well, you hateful misogynists out there, you don't realize that all we're doing is just pushing buttons. And a trainee can push the buttons as well as anybody else can. Oh, really? Well, that seems to be what happened in their warfight simulation here. Didn't seem to work. You know, we're going to build a military around button-pushing trainees. Because we don't need anybody who can actually do anything, right? So let's just do that. And then what happens when all of your button-pushing electronics goes bye-bye? And there's a lot of ways to make that happen. They haven't learned the lesson, though. As LifeSite News points out, the Senate has now appointed a lesbian activist and a quote-unquote trans woman, this is a man who says that he's a woman, to top military positions. On Thursday, Gina Ortiz-Jones and Sean Skelly were approved for their new positions by unanimous consent. That means the Republicans were in on this as well. What is the Republican? You mean the Republicans didn't oppose this? Well, I can't believe this. Ortiz-Jones is a lesbian who will serve as the Undersecretary of the Air Force. Sean Skelly is a man who believes that he's a woman, now appointed as Assistant Secretary of Defense for Readiness. Wait a minute, I got to fix my makeup. if you want to know your enemy, perhaps you should know yourself. We has met the enemy, and he is us, right? Tesla's autopilot system has mistaken the moon for a yellow traffic light and is accordingly slowing down the vehicles or stopping them altogether. So perhaps we could do an upgrade with the Department of Defense. Maybe they could talk to Elon Musk. And I'm sure if they threw a few billion dollars his way, he could give them the autopilot system that they could use that can't tell the moon from a yellow traffic light. These are the geniuses that are going to defend us with electronics. That's right. They can use it to improve their war fighting. And then the editorial from Ed Snowden. He says, you know what the greatest danger to national security is? The insecurity industry. He says the greatest danger to national security has become the companies that claim to protect it. And I would say that that applies not only to cybersecurity. I would say it also applies to the security complex, the military-industrial complex. This applies to the intelligence community as well as to the Pentagon and that whole group. These people who tell us that they're going to do everything they can to protect us. It's all about national security. Don't look at what we're doing. Give us a black budget. Don't question anything that we do. And we can do anything to you in the name of national security that we wish without any limitations by law or anything else. They are the greatest threats to our country. When you have a government that obeys no law, this is why we say that it is better to let a lot of guilty people go free than to jail an innocent man, because when the government has no law, when the government becomes lawless, when the government becomes criminal, when the government terrorizes people, that's the worst possible scenario because of their power and their proximity to you. That is the worst possible scenario. The idea that we give these people a blank check, the idea that everything they do to us is blank, it's redacted, you're not allowed to see it. And now we're seeing that whole ethic being played out even in this manufactured health pandemic that they say. And again, why are so many people getting sick and dying? Well, it's because they've shut down effective treatment because it's in their interest. These institutions have become predatory. And the predatory institutions, this is why, you know, we're at this particular time, in this fourth turning, where people are starting to realize this. Two things happen over about a 70 to 80 year period. And you can see this over and over again. As I pointed out many times, Strauss and Howe's fourth turning, they go back and they look at the cycles. 500 years in American and British history, they point out that global history is now aligned with that cycle. But you could even see it when the Soviet Union was not really aligned with that. You could see that from 1917 to 1989, when the Soviet Union imploded on itself, that was a period of 72 years. This was about, you know, it's not exactly 80 years. And, you know, some of these fourth turnings happen fairly quickly. The Civil War happened within a period of about 4 years. But most of them, it takes about 15 to 20 years for this to happen. We're in the middle of a fourth turning. What happens is, after several generations, after, you know, you've gone through four generations, these institutions become hopelessly corrupt. And people start to respond to that. They start to see how corrupt these organizations are. And they start to talk about what they're going to do about it. And so that's just where we are right now. You need to understand the times that we're in. You need to understand that this is a very dangerous crisis that we're in right now. Crisis, again, the Chinese character for crisis is danger and opportunity. This is both a dangerous time and it is also an opportunity, as we've talked about with homeschooling. It is a great opportunity. I want to, as a matter of fact, I've got a question here from someone. And I'm trying to find it here, but I'll just go by memory because I can't find the piece of paper here. Somebody asked me about homeschool curriculum and, you know, what I would recommend. And so let me just go from memory without reading the actual question to you. And they were concerned because they wanted to know what they could do. They asked questions about credentials and other issues and you know, what should I do for my child? Because this is something, and make sure that you, here it is, found it, finally. Brian in Arizona. So I've been following you for many years and pray for your continued success. Thank you. I have a question about homeschooling for my seventh grade daughter. What should I look for in a homeschool program? Are there certain accreditations or national brand company that can be trusted? I want to see that she gets the best education, and I'm worried about signing her up for some type of schooling only to regret it after the fact. Well, that's good, and that illustrates that when you take control of your child's education, you are concerned about what is in her best interest. And it's why I've said for the longest time, you can't do worse than the people in the schools, because when you look at the schools where they're spending the most per capita, that's where they have some of the highest illiteracy rates in Washington, D.C., and New York City, and so forth. So having a big institution, having a lot of money, does not necessarily equal results. As a matter of fact, we've seen just the opposite happen because of institutional corruption. So where do you find information about curricula? And I would suggest that, you know, used to be, I would suggest to people to go to a homeschooling convention. Usually they have them on an annual basis in all the different states. And we used to get a lot of, that was a very, very good thing that we had when we did our children, because they would have a fair where you could go around and you could look at the curriculum and you could look at the textbooks and you could look at what we really kind of focused on was the other stuff, not so much textbooks. We were really more interested in having them, this is just our particular approach. There's as many different approaches as there are children. And that's a key thing about homeschooling. You can have a different approach even for different kids because they learn differently. You might have one child that wants that responds to a particular type of instruction and the other child responds to a different one. And depending on how much of this you offload to online instruction, and there are some schools, always have been, schools that would do online instruction. Or you can do some of it yourself, and you can direct a little bit of it. So there's an infinite variation of approaches that you can take. First thing is, don't try to reproduce school at home. You can do online classes, which does kind of reproduce that, and we've seen, you know, people have done that this last year. And those online classes will give your kids a better quality instruction than they're going to get from the schools. But I would say, if you want to know about this in the past, I would say go to these conventions, but I imagine a lot of these things have been shut down because of all this COVID nonsense. So the next place I would suggest is to go to Homeschool Legal Defense Association. You should get acquainted with them, because if you have any problems from neighbors who try to attack you for homeschooling, and again, this is not as big a deal as it used to be 20, 30 years ago, but it can still happen. Homeschool Legal Defense Association will come to your aid. They've got a lot of experience with this. And again, fortunately, that has really diminished quite a bit as homeschooling has gone up in popularity. But they can be a source to refer you to the State Homeschooling Association if they do have conventions. But they can also, that State Homeschooling Association can give you references to places where you can look at different curricula. Key thing I would say is that you have the interest of your daughter at heart. And that is the most important thing. To watch her to see how she is responding to this. And you don't necessarily have to be locked into something too heavily. That's one of the things that you can look at. And also, do not be too focused on accreditation. Because remember, what is your objective? I used to say, when we would see people, that it was a thing back in the 90s when we were homeschooling our kids, beginning to do that. And I would see these bumper stickers that say, I have an honor student at such and such a school. I said, you know, we need to get a bumper sticker that says, I have an honorable student that I have trained, you know, homeschooling. Because I was always more focused on their character. I was looking for character, and I was looking for their ability to think and their ability to continue to learn, to get the tools of learning. And that's something I would recommend, that you look at Dorothy Sayers' essay on that. And, you know, the tools of learning. Always in the past, we would have what was called a liberal education, and that didn't mean Antifa and BLM and critical race theory. What that meant was that you were liberating the kids, giving them freedom to pursue their own education, to think critically. And along those lines, you'll find a lot of classes out there that help you to instruct your kids in terms of critical thinking, in terms of logic classes. You can go to things like a classical curriculum, where it's a very formal structure. And there'll be, all over the country, there are things called classical conversations. And you'll have people there who have a more classic approach to education, where in the early ages, you'll expose the kids at the beginning stages to things that are fundamental. So there's memorization, there's at least an understanding of, a partial understanding of the roots that make up the English language, things like Greek and Latin. And then giving them some fundamental tools, and then moving them from a grammar stage to rhetoric and to critical thinking and that type of thing. But it's a lot more aggressive curriculum. We did not do that. We did kind of an unschooling approach, which was just kind of an ad hoc. We tried to keep track of what the other schools were teaching so that we made sure that they didn't get behind in certain things, and to make sure that it didn't mean that we would teach those things. In some cases, what we would do is teach against those things, because I wanted the kids to be able to understand why those things they were being, that the other kids were being taught in school, were not true. So if I was teaching a kid today, I would be teaching them the 1619 program project, and I would be deconstructing that. I would be doing the same thing with critical race theory. I would be taking it on directly and talking about that. So that's something that you can pursue in addition to your English classes and your math classes, and that's something that you as a parent ought to do. You might be able to find some of that stuff with Ron Paul. He might be approaching that. But there's a lot of different sources, so I suggest HSLDA, Homeschool Legal Defense Association. They can get you in touch with your local homeschool association in the state where you are, and then just build from that. And you can try a bunch of things. And that's the good news about that, is that you've got a lot of different approaches that you can do. I had this letter sent to me yesterday, said, listening to today's show, you commented on the protests of the hospital chains in Michigan. This is Michael in Michigan. He says, I work for one of those two chains, the one that is the second largest Catholic health not-for-profit in the country. The company has moved so far away from our mission that staff continually question decisions while referencing the morals the management team preaches to us. In less than 2 years, this has gone from being a Catholic-based family environment to being an echo chamber for whatever the FDA and the CDC will pay them to say. We've had critical race training during COVID, and it remains a topic of discussion for the past year. We're now being forced to take the jab, or we will lose our job in September. There are quiet discussions internally among staff about resisting the jab, but as time goes on, management is steadfast in their decision to fire anyone who is VH positive, meaning vaccine hesitant. I said, you know, they go, everybody's VH. Yeah, I'm VH positive. I tested negative for vaccine hesitancy. Management throws out several crazy conspiracy theories in every meeting to embarrass anyone who won't take the jab. They'll talk about magnets. They'll talk about other issues created to distract from the real points of disagreement, but no discussion on why vaccinated people still need to wear a mask if it works. Management stated in our most recent meetings that not a single vaccinated person has died from COVID or become seriously ill. Also, no one has died from the vaccine. I made a point to write that down in my notes from the meeting because data shows that is 100% false. If you've got nearly 12,000 people now who have died according to the VAERS database, and again, there's reports from a whistleblower saying there's another database where they keep track of this, so they don't publicize like that. And in that database, it shows 45,000 people dying within 3 days of taking the vaccine. But let's just show with a public one, the VAERS database. If you got nearly 12,000 reports of people dying, most of those happening within 2 or 3 days, the onset of the symptoms and the sickness starts within a 48-hour period in most of those cases. And some of the people survive for another week. But if you got that many cases there, you don't think there's a single one of them that is true? And we know that. I mean, we've seen these individual cases. We've talked about some of the individual cases. So they're flat out lying to you. And what they do, and this is why I was so reluctant, I know I had a lot of people talk to me and say, hey, you got to talk about the vaccines. You got to talk about the magnets and about the graphene stuff. It's like, I don't want to get into that level of detail when we have such obvious things that we can use to oppose this. Again, if their vaccine works, why are they all getting sick? If their vaccine works, but now we got the Delta variant, but you should wear the mask. Well, the mask isn't stopping anything either. And so you get vaccinated and you wear a mask. We need to attack the lies from that standpoint, the obvious lies, rather than getting involved in some things that we cannot verify. And some things which, quite frankly, might have been thrown out there. It might be true, or it might be that it was thrown out there by people who want to make you look stupid. Or it might be thrown out there by people who want to get a lot of view counts. Or it could be both. So anyway, he says, you used the phrase the other day, spiritual death. And what I said was spiritual murder, spirit murder, spirit murder. And that was, the racists that are pushing critical race theory. They're saying what you're doing is spirit murder of people of color. Well, what they're trying to do is spirit murder of children who are white-skinned. Why are we trying to do this to people? Why are we trying to murder their spirit? Yeah, we're all spiritually dead. That's part of the fall. But we're made alive by Christ. But the whole idea of trying to do spirit murder to people, that's a new category thing. He said, anyway, on a show recently, it struck with me. It explains how I feel and many around me feel. I'm tired of being lectured by friends and family who don't know the facts and just repeat Fauci's talking points. After 500 days, discouragement sets in, and you no longer want to get together with friends and family. We're creatures of habit, and we've gone so long under this oppression trying to separate us. Loneliness is the real virus that is being spread. And isolating you is the way they murder your spirit. Understand that. Positivity and hope come from God, and we must anchor our hearts to that truth. That's right. As Psalm 68 says, God sets the lonely in families. and he has created a family for you. And you'll find it in your local church. And if that church doesn't work, I played the clip for you from Stephen Schellenberger. You know, find a church where there's somebody that genuinely believes that Jesus is the Christ, who genuinely believes what they have in their book in front of them. And that will make all the difference in the world, because if they genuinely believe it, they will live by it. Real quickly, what's going on with January the 6th? Yesterday, we had, and I think Glenn Greenwald was spot on when he said, they're exploiting the police emotions for partisan gain and for security state power. And that's exactly what we saw going on in this dog and pony show being put on by Liz Cheney. You had crying policemen. You had crying Adam Kinzinger talking about this. Look, I understand if you've got a situation where people are fighting, they're going to say a lot of bad stuff to you. I mean, seriously, these people, this is the group that shot Ashley Babbitt up close in the throat without warning. Didn't do a warning shot, just shot her in the throat. These are the people who are complaining that they had names thrown at them. I'm sorry. But, you know, that is a crime, and that should be punished. But this is melodramatics trying to create a political environment for political repression. That is what this is really about at this stage. It was about financial grifting. It was based on lies about what could be done. And I'm distinguishing that from the election, which I don't trust. I don't trust any election. And this last one was perhaps the most corrupt that we've had. So I'm not saying that the election should be believed or trusted. And we see Twitter is now suspending any the election audit accounts on Twitter from multiple states. So they're just shutting this down. So if they're doing that, what are they afraid of? Right? That's a tell. Just like the immunity for the vaccine companies, just like, you can't have these therapeutics over here that are cheap. No. We're going to shut those down. We're going to punish you. So when they start doing this, you know that there's something they don't want you to see. But I was saying from the very beginning that nothing was being done. As a matter of fact, nothing was done before the election to stop the kind of theft that we saw. Trump handed it to them. He created the conditions that created that fraud. And then what he did was he fundraised off of it. He wasn't doing anything to push this back. Furthermore, I said that if you have a massive crowd of people there, which they can't do anything at that point to change the certification of the election. It was too late at that point to do anything about it. I mean, you could show up and protest how crooked the situation was, but you're better off to protest what's happening with this medical lockdown. Still, there was no way that they were going to turn that around. But I said you have a lot of liability that they're going to stage something with agent provocateurs and that they're going to use that to create new laws to shut down all political dissent. And that's exactly what is happening now. It makes me sick to see it. It makes me sick to see people, even if people were violent, they deserve to have a speedy trial. They deserve to have due process. They do not deserve to be tortured. You're not going to see any of that mentioned in this rigged committee. But again, I ask, why didn't Trump do that? He was calling it an insurrection last year. Why didn't he investigate Soros? Why didn't he investigate BLM? Why did he do nothing at all? It's very telling. We're going to cut it at this point, and we will pick up on the Gaithyism tomorrow, because I think that is a very interesting perspective. But we're out of time, and so we'll pick that up tomorrow. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you for your support. Please share the broadcast and the program. You'll find it at thedavidknightshow.com. You'll find all the links. And we'll see you tomorrow.
The Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God.
That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. TheDavidKnightShow.com.
Tell Alexa to add the APS radio skill and have access to the best channels anywhere, from country to blues, classic hits to news. APS radio curates incredibly diverse playlists for you to enjoy. Get details at APSradio.com.